regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, August 6, 2012. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for a loved one that's recently passed? And actually, we'd like to do this in honor of Tom Sullivan, who was a longtime city employee and laid a lot of the groundwork for the city as we see it today. Thank you. Chief Cox, would you like to leave this on the flag this evening?
There's a flag in the corner, please hand over hard to repeat.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Roll call.
Here.
Present.
Here.
Here.
Here. Thank you, Donna. And we'll just cover our closed session announcements. I know Assistant City Attorney Martin.
Yes, on Monday.
Except for turning on the mic. It's okay. On Monday, July 16th. There was a 5 p.m. special meeting and closed session regarding a public employee evaluation of the city manager. Council reconvened into open session and announced there were no reportable actions taken at the closed session.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. At this point, we'll review the order of the agenda as presented by staff and see if we want to make any changes to the agenda. Do any members of the council wish to change any items on the agenda?
Nope.
I'll move.
Okay.
Before you do that, Mr. Mayor, can I suggest that staff would recommend continuing the adoption of the recognized obligation payment schedule to the next meeting? The reason for that, the state has just issued another set of forms and procedures, so essentially we have to redo the work we've already done.
They're not making it easy, are they?
No.
And then I would also suggest that we, and I know we have a public hearing item, but that's going to be a rather lengthy item, to take the consent agenda prior to that. I had a special request by someone, and if that's okay with my colleagues, we can do that.
And I did have I wanted to pull one item on the consent agenda.
Okay, so when we get there, please remind me. Okay. So then what we'll do is we will go through the ceremonial calendar, which is item one. We'll do public communications, and then we will go into our consent agenda, and then we will go back to the public hearing item that's listed as number two on the agenda. Is that okay with everyone?
Yes.
Okay. So we normally make a motion on that. So does someone want to make a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. So let's move on with our agenda. This is our ceremonial calendar. This is item number one. This is a swearing-in ceremony of Commander Tim Miller, Police Chief Copsey.
I think he already did.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council, and the community. It's my pleasure to
introduce Tim Miller. Tim, would come on up.
Tim Miller, this is a ceremony kind of that we do. It's kind of official business. We do a swearing in. Tim was one of our sergeants with the Grover Beach Police Department, and he has been recently promoted to the rank of commander. Also recently, actually July 1st, we changed the name of our, used to be a lieutenant role, to that of commander. And it's strictly in name only. It met some guidelines for posts, our training. It was easier to get commander into command college. It met most of our, actually all of our other cities in the county use commander instead of lieutenant. So it was just kind of a time to do that as we had a new promotion. Tim started, I'm going to say a few words and embarrass him up here. Tim started with the police department in 2002. And he's done many jobs throughout the years from police officer, detective, field training officer, most recently a sergeant. He's kind of been one of our go-to guys for our IT support. He's done a lot of our projects within the department, been a real assistance with a number of our video systems that we have. He came actually to us with a little bit of IT background, although that's not his passion any longer. Tim's just kind of been a go-to guy. He actually, a number of years ago, he actually started his completed his bachelor's program, getting ready for promotion. Got a bachelor's of science in criminal justice. He's now working on his master's, so hopefully he'll be smarter than me. He's got numerous commendations from other staff. He was awarded in the last 10 years two times as the Employee of the Year. So he's well-liked amongst his peers. It was my pleasure to go through the process, and no doubt Tim was the man for the commander position in our city, in our community, and for our department. So, Tim, I want to congratulate you for your accomplishments. Step over here away from this. We'll get in the cameras. And it's this time that I get to swear you in as a commander. And you get to repeat after me. So raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
Timothy Wayne Miller.
Do solemnly swear. That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies,
foreign and domestic,
that I will bear true faith and allegiance,
to the Constitution of the United States,
and the Constitution of the State of California, that I take this obligation freely,
without any mental reservation,
or purpose of evasion,
and that I will well and faithfully
discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter. Congratulations. And now I'd like to call, he has his family here. Jay, if you want to come up and pin the badge. Nice new shiny badge. There you go. All right, thank you. And would you like any words to say?
No, I just want to thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to the challenges ahead.
Good deal. Thanks, Tim.
Before we move on, I want to acknowledge a couple of individuals who are here tonight, and hopefully I'm not going to embarrass them, but I did want to acknowledge we have a couple of former mayors and council members who are in our attendance this evening, Ms. D. Santos and Mr. Peter Keith. Good to see you both. Okay, let's move into our public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item in the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind the council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, we cannot take action on any items that are not on the agenda. So public communication is for anyone who would like to address any items not on our agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address the council during public communications this evening?
On 16th Sector Bryden. I've missed more meetings here in the last year than I missed in 50 years I've been here. And the reason why is my health is very important to me because I got a great granddaughter that's a year old and a great grandson that's 4 years old. I've taken to the ranch and I teach them. I don't want to be one of those 15 million without jobs. But I know why. Because I just came back from the Midwest after 2 months there. But I'm going to start as I usually do. Constructive criticism never hurt anybody. It's a damn truth that hurts. Before I left, I knew I had a water meter problem because those two houses have never been the same in 50 years, and I've had both of them, the other one, for 30 years. And I told them here before I left, but when I came back, if you got 10 horses out here and you take 5 out, the water consumption is not the same. So if I leave for 2 months and I go back to the Midwest, there's 2 people in the house, there's 4 people next door, and they come out the same. There ain't no way in hell that can happen. So I asked the man over here, I said, you know what? They go by down the street, they read the meters, and if there's a problem with the meter, they can detect it. Well, that's a bunch of bull, because it's not so, because it's got proof right here. So I'm telling the people, Grover, they better watch their water meters, because them things are a bunch of junk. They're not working right. And I'll bet you there's a lot of people getting took just like I am. I don't like it. I don't think it's right. And I think you 2 people, you 5 people up there and him, should get out there and solve this problem. The people getting ripped up. Now then, 2 months back there, I drove by myself. 166, I got behind 2 semis. It took me 40 minutes to get across. 2 trucks follow me, pickups. One takes the ditch because he couldn't get around. California had said years ago, 166 will be improved. I saw better roads all across the country and back than 46 and 166, and they didn't have as many trucks. And I got into Needles the first night. The gas is 459, 469. Across the river is 359. You know, that's California. And I drove from there to Albuquerque, and Saturday morning on the east side, almost to Texas, I'm listening to these 2 guys, Albuquerque Station. They're talking about California towns going broke, bankrupt. And guess what? One guy comes up and says, oh, there's a beach town on here. Wow, what was that at? Oh, it's Grover Beach. Boy, I honked my horn and there was nobody around me. Usually there's 5 trucks, maybe a car or 2. But I thought I had to hear that clear out there in eastern New Mexico. And so I kept going, and I saw many. In fact, the total come up to be 11. Penny Sears Kmart, parking lot grass. I saw 9 hotels, and 1 really killed me because it's in my home state, Indiana. On the Wabash, 4 stories high, big parking lot. Convention center, boarded up. So if you think that this is gravy, and you have gravy, because those poor towns out there on Route 66 suffer because there's nobody out there on the road. And there's nobody traveling except for trucks. And you have 1.8, you shouldn't have a problem here with money, finance. There shouldn't be one. The reason why is because it's irresponsible, incompetent, and people that don't know how to do business. Now, my God, I was back there, and I saw a lot of stuff.
John, I need you to wrap up. Can you wrap up?
I had a sister in a nursing home. It was terrible. I called Pence, the representative. Boy, he got the state up there. Can't do anything because this government can't do this. This can't do that. You know, it's a joke. And these people get paid big salaries. They get benefits. They get retirement and vacation. But they can't do anything. I came back. I crossed in the Mississippi River. A telephone call. I could count the fish down there because they had a wreck and I was crossing. It was Helen McIver. I said, Helen, can't talk to you. But then I get way on out there, and I find out that she had come back to Colorado Springs. Well, I stopped in Wichita, saw my grandson, went to a baseball game, and these couple came up, and they said to me, Mr. Weissong, yes. Well, we're so glad that your son from Cuesta College sent our son out here to play baseball this summer, because that's where the scouts are at. I said, gee whiz, San Luis Obispo, huh? Yeah. Well, I went on to to Colorado Springs, the fire's there, and lo and behold, Helen McIver must have been there. But I went all the way through the mountains and back by myself, 6,000 700 miles. Now, this old man's been through hell. Two knees, run over by a pickup, left for dead, laid on his deathbed for 19 days. And you know what? If I can do it, and I can take care of my family and my situation, I don't understand why these damn politicians can't do it. They get paid enough.
Thank you, John. Someone asked me the other day where you'd been, so it's good to see you.
I went to the Midwest.
Very good.
I had a sister, husband's in a nursing home, and it was a two-star, and you can't get five-star because they're good.
Thank you, John. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else, I'm going to close it to the public and bring it back to the council. And at this point, we are going to move into our consent agenda this evening. And on consent, we typically take routine items as a group. And there are, looks like four items on consent this evening. One is a treasury report for the period of July 10th through August 1st. One is a second reading and adoption of an ordinance adding smoking Chapter 17 to Article 3 of the Municipal Code to add regulations restricting smoking in public places. The third is the adoption of a federal equity sharing agreement. And then the final is the Traffic Committee report recommending a 15-foot red zone along the south curb of Ritchie Road from North 8th Street to Grover Heights Elementary School parking lot. Do any members of the council want to pull any items from consent?
I would like to pull the treasurer's report. I have questions on three items.
Okay, we're going to pull the treasurer's report. Anyone else? Okay, and I have no request from the public to speak on consent, so I would look for a motion on items 4, 5, and 6.
I'll move that we approve items 4, 5, and 6 of the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Traditionally, when we pull an item from consent, we put it at the end of the agenda, but since we've got a couple items that are going to be very lengthy, why don't we go ahead and take the item number 3 that was pulled. So, Councilmember Peterson.
And I'm aware that you have no notice on this, and so if you're not able to answer these, we could cover that at a different time. I had questions on the $9,000-plus expenditure on meter radios, and I wondered if those were meter radios for the water account, and shouldn't those be under the water account, or does this cover all the accounts?
It probably covers all the accounts, but, the $9,000, if it says it's for meters, then that would be associated with water. Do you know what number that is?
It was number 4489, so it was about almost halfway down the first page.
Those are all meter radios. Those are.
Uh-huh.
Meter radio replacements. I can recognize the vendor name.
Okay, so it just seems to me that if they're meter radios for water, why is it coming out of our general account? It looks like
these are the warrant register is all of the checks issued for all of the funds.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then also there was another payment, 4 or 5 up, number 435 of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. And I'd had a conversation with someone just last week, and I had said, we really don't have any authority to do very much with the sanitation district because we just pay our water bills like everyone else. But when I see this payment, I'm thinking that's not a water bill payment, that $75,000. Do we have other payments to South San?
That is their regular payment, and it's on almost a quarterly basis, but I'm not sure.
Is that a water bill payment?
No.
I mean a sewage payment?
Yes,
or is
it is.
It's
sewer.
Just the
yes.
sewer for yes. just the city?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. And
clarification on that. Yeah. Isn't that, Bob, the money that's paid by the residents
yes.
for the sewer sanitation services, and then the city forwards that money
I see.
On to
yes.
the sanitation
Thank you.
District?
Yeah,
so the city collects it with the water bills,
exactly.
and then
Correct.
We pass it on quarterly. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And then the last one, on the last page, number 3898, which is about 10 up from the bottom, the San Luis Obispo County Visitor and Conference Bureau, there was a payment of 4314, and I'd noticed beforehand there was a payment of 5,000.
Yes, both were authorized in the budget. The 4314 was the our share of for the simply the Visitors Bureau itself.
Based on our TOT.
Right, okay. And the 5,000 was for the saver.
Thank you. Thanks very much. That's all I had.
Then I have a question.
Okay.
Since you brought up the meter radios, and especially considering comment today, is that replacement of malfunctioning ones?
Yes.
Okay, and how do you determine that a meter is malfunctioning?
Usually what happens is that as we patrol the streets and the radios, information from the radios is collected, and that data is reviewed, and we can tell which meters are, which radios are transmitting and which are not. And if those are not transmitting, we go out and double-check them, identify what the issue is, and then replace them.
So this is just the transferring of information. This has nothing to do with the accuracy of the meter?
That's correct. It's just the transmission of the information.
Okay, so if someone has a problem with their meter, then they need to call about the accuracy of the meter.
They do, and what normally happens with that is that we meet with the individual, review the meter itself, and if warranted, we'll test the meter. We have a way of doing that.
All right, thank you.
My meter came out.
Okay, John. So now that we've pulled this from consent, does any member of the public want to address this item before the council? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close it, bring it back. Someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
Well, I'll make a motion that we accept item 3.
And I'll second that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion on the motion, I believe we can do this on a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. Let's move back up to our public hearing item. This is item number 2 on the agenda. This is consideration of a zoning update, zoning code update, and associated general plan and local coastal program amendments to bring into conformance with land use and housing elements. And this is staff report is going to be given by Community Development Director Bruce Buckingham. Mr. Buckingham.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to provide the council with a presentation on the proposed zoning code update, conduct a public hearing to receive public comment, have the council then discuss the zoning code update, and consider taking action on the Planning Commission's recommendation to approve the zoning code update. There are 4 actions before the council tonight for their consideration. An initial study and draft negative declaration have been prepared for the zoning code update, which concludes the proposed update and related applications would not have a significant impact on the environment. Second, approval of a general plan amendment, which includes changes to the land use map and minor modifications to the text of the general plan land use element. A zoning code amendment, which would repeal the existing zoning code and zoning map in its entirety and replace it with a new development code and updated zoning map. And a local coastal program amendment, which updates the land use designations and zones to be consistent with the land use element and zoning code updates. To provide some background, over the last several years, the council has been in the process of updating land use policies based on the city's visioning process, which concluded in 2004. In 2008, the council adopted an economic development strategy that included policies to streamline the development review process when appropriate. In 2009, the council updated the housing element update that also contained policies related to residential development. And then in February 2010, the council adopted a comprehensive update to the city's general plan land use element, or LUE, to reflect the community input received during that visioning process. In 2011, the council adopted the West Grand Avenue Master Plan, which further refined policies for development along the city's major commercial corridor. And so as a result of those actions, tonight is the final step in updating the zoning code to implement those policies contained in the land use element and the other documents. To clarify, the land use element contains broad land use policies that are implemented through the regulations and development standards contained in the city's zoning code. As an example, the land use element could indicate that commercial uses are appropriate on West Grand Avenue, but the zoning code is what actually indicates which uses are allowed, conditionally permitted, or not permitted, and it provides all the development standards, and when we say that, we mean height, setbacks, lot coverage. So in addition to bringing the zoning code into conformance with that land use element and the other policy documents, the other key goals of this zoning code update are to revise the commercial and industrial use tables, to reduce the development review process time by allowing more uses by right. This allows many types of businesses to occupy existing buildings without having to go through the public hearing process with the Planning Commission. Also, reduce and eliminate regulations where possible to expedite the project review consistent with the city's economic development strategy. We also have reformatted and reorganized the zoning code to reduce its size, make it as user-friendly as possible and easier to find information. Lastly, we incorporated all of the development regulations, such as the subdivision ordinance, floodplain regulations, and sign ordinances, which were previously not part of the zoning code. They were contained in other portions of the city's municipal code. So as a result of creating a new single document that will contain all development regulations, we are proposing the zoning code be renamed the development code. The city has hired Lisa Wise Consulting to assist with this update. Lisa's here tonight, and she will be involved in the presentation on the commercial zone update, which was one of her primary tasks. Lisa is familiar with the city. She was involved in the housing element update as well as the Grand Avenue Master Plan. I will note that though we are saying this is a comprehensive update to the zoning code, it is recognized there are several items that were not included in this, such as the sign ordinance, plan unit developments, and parking, which the council have all indicated are important. Those items will be updated in the near future after this update. So just to give you a basic overview, the new development code is divided into 9 chapters. To planners, it may be logical. To everyone else, it may not. Chapter 1 is purpose and applicability. It's providing the basic framework of the development code. Chapter 2, the zones and allowable land uses. This contains the descriptions of all the zones, use tables, and development standards, and it's, quite frankly, what most people are focused on. Chapter 3 is standards for all development and land uses, and this just simply groups development standards that apply to all zones, such as landscaping, parking, and signs, so they're all combined in one chapter. And then Chapter 4, standards for specific development and land uses, groups specific development standards that apply to certain land uses. For instance, if you have a screening requirement for outdoor storage, it would be in that chapter. Chapter 5 contains the site development standards. These are the development standards that relate to developing property, such as street improvements and utility undergrounding. Chapter 6 are procedures, which contain the procedures for filing development applications and all of our permits requirements and type of permits like use permits or administrative use permits. Chapter 7 is administration. That contains procedures for public hearings, appeals, amendments to the general plan and development code, and nonconforming uses, structures, and lots. Chapter 8, subdivision regulations, contain regulations for subdividing lots. And Chapter 9 will include all the definitions related to land use. So with that, we're going to go through each chapter individually, just highlight or summarize the important changes. We recognize that it's comprehensive. We won't cover absolutely everything, but we would then respond to public or council questions regarding anything else. So Chapter 1, we did include some new sections to address the purpose and applicability of the code, rules of interpretation, relationship between the general plan and local coastal program. Chapter 2, again, this is really the brunt of everything, contains all the descriptions of the zones, the use tables, the development standards. So we will walk through all the residential, commercial, industrial zones, but the first sections will be a little bit lengthy. The residential zone section basically remained the same, no significant changes. We would be renaming the zones to be consistent with the land use designations. As an example, R2 is currently called duplex residential. It would be renamed medium density residential to reflect the land use designation, which is medium density residential. The uses and development standards for residential were also consolidated into tables for ease of use. And let me just, here's an example of the new format and what a use table is. It lists the use in the far left-hand column. The zones appear across the top. You have the chart indicating whether it's permitted, a use permit is required, or not permitted. And then we also have over in the right-hand column something that should be able to assist people. It lists if there are specific regulations, it actually refers them to the section in Chapter 4 that are applicable. We also consolidated the development standards. They used to be in a text format. Again, this would be now what a typical development standard table looks like, so that you can have your setbacks, front, side, rear, your building heights, lot coverage, all contained in one table. Again, zones across the top and specific regulations that would apply on the far right-hand column. So hopefully a little more easy to use if you're familiar with our current zoning code. We did make a few minor revisions to allowed uses within these residential zones. Really the primary one was we restricted boarding houses, high occupancy residential uses, and residential care facilities with more than six people to the R3 zone only, because those uses are typically more intensive, and so some of those had previously been allowed in the R1 or R2 zones. We also added housing element policies related to single room occupancy facilities, senior housing, and transitional and supportive housing, and be happy to go into detail, more detail if the council would like. We also added bed and breakfast uses in residential zones subject to a use permit approval and certain regulations. We updated residential care and daycare uses to reflect state law. State law does mandate that some of these uses are allowed in R1 zones, and we are now at least consistent with state law. We did revise a few development standards in the CPR1 and CR1 zones. We did modify the development standards for lot coverage and landscaping to bring them in alignment to the R1 zone standards. These are all R1 zone standards, but there were minor differences in lot coverage or landscaping. We did the same thing in the CR2 zone. We modified lot coverage and front setbacks to be consistent with all the other R2 zones. And lastly, in the CR3 zone, we revised, we actually reduced the height and the lot coverage to be consistent with the R3 zone standards. And I can't speak to the history, but I know the council did make some changes to the R1, R2, and R3 development standards several years ago, and my assumption is that we didn't go through the coastal permit process to update the ones in the coastal zone. So those have all been included in this update. We also added density calculations for these residential zones, which were previously adopted by council resolution, so they were detached. This is just incorporating them into the document. We added several policies from the land use element, straight out of the land use element, regarding infill development and hillside development, and we also deleted several sections, such as mobile home park development standards and guest quarters that are just no longer applicable. Lastly, we deleted the word needlessly from the required finding that we need to make when views from adjacent properties are not needlessly or substantially obstructed for two-story residences in the R1 zones north of Grand Avenue. I know the council is familiar with this, and the Planning Commission has grappled with this, and really the result of removing the word needlessly is just because of the difficulty in determining what constitutes needlessly. There are two residential rezones to note. The first would change the areas currently zoned residential agricultural, or RA, to R1 to be consistent with the land use element. This increases the density from the 2 dwelling units per acre to the 5 dwelling units per acre maximum allowed in the low-density residential land use designation. There are three small pockets of RA zoning that still exist. The 8 or 9 lots on Laguna Court, which is just south of El Camino Real and west of Oak Park Boulevard. And then on Farrell Road, north of Farrell Road, there is one pocket left of RA that would be west of the future South 16th extension. And then there's also one other established neighborhood, Rose Court, that again is on the north side of Farrell Road. The other zone change we would mention is that there is one small pocket of what is the now called mobile home zone on Nacimiento, and this would also change to R1 to be consistent with the land use element. This would simply allow conventional construction, stick frame homes, to be built in this particular zone. I believe this was adopted back in the 60s when mobile homes were not allowed in R1 zones, but state law has since changed. So this would simply allow people, like in any R1 zone, to continue to have mobile homes or modular homes. It would just simply allow conventional stick-built construction in this particular zone. So those are the changes in the residential zone. I'm going to now turn it over to Lisa on the commercial zone updates.
Thank you, Ruth. Good evening. My name is Lisa Wise. We're a consulting firm in San Luis Obispo that we do a lot of code work all over the state. We've been doing code for about 10 years. We have about 10 slides to cover some of the highlights of the commercial zones. This first one goes through the just lines up the existing zones and the proposed zones and then the general plan land use designations. As Bruce said, one of the primary goals of this update was to make all the land uses consistent with the general plan, and I'll point out some of those. Major changes or consistency changes we made. A couple of things just to note on here. At the top row, instead of the central business district, we split that into two zones, and we'll talk a little bit about that, and we've talked about that before. There is no office land use designation in the general plan, so to implement that, we use the neighborhood land use designation and the central business land use designation, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then if you look at the bottom three zones, coastal visitor survey and coastal commercial, those are what implement your coastal zone, what's regulated by the state coastal commission, as you know. This next slide has a couple points on it. I think Bruce pointed out a lot of these notes. We did revise the land use tables and development standards. I think the current code has like 6 or 7 pages of land use standards, so we collapsed those into 2 to make it much more user-friendly, which I think is an improvement in terms of developers and users of the code. Looking at making it consistent with the general plan and the West Grand Avenue plan, and that was one reason why we introduced the CBO, as we talked about a while ago. And then adding the potential for 4 stories at 4th and West Grand, but also in the downtown core, which was a recommendation of the Planning Commission. Talk a little bit more about that. This is the zoning map. I just want to go to the next slide and hone in on a little chunk of this to explain a couple of things. This is between 5th and 14th. This is where we've taken the downtown commercial core and refined it a little bit. And this is really to implement the general plan. The whole core in the general plan now is a central business mixed use. So we've refined that a little bit in the zoning code, which is common. It's common to have multiple zones for one land use designation. So we've separated that into the central business district, which goes between 8th and 11th. And then as transition areas on both sides of that, We've created this CBO, which allows more flexibility for uses and property owners, creating more residential uses, allowing more services by right, and just more flexibility. As we talked about when we did the master plan, you have a very long corridor that requiring commercial uses all along that corridor was somewhat problematic from an economic development perspective. So the rest of the slides sort of walk through the zones, and there's a lot of information. We'll just kind of hit a couple highlights. So this is a central business zone. This is West Grand Avenue between 8th and 11th. Really, the purpose of the zone is the same as it's been in your current zoning ordinance. It allows a lot of retail, offices, and services by right. A couple of things were introduced for the general plan. We introduced a 3.0 FAR, floor area ratio, for consistency. And then one of the things we did, and this you'll see this in all the zones, I believe, is that there was a 50% residential requirement in your zones, which so maximum requirement, so you couldn't have an all-residential product. And we've made that more flexible. So in the CBO, you can have residential. There's no percentage kind of requiring that, but it has to be above or behind the commercial so that you get that ground floor commercial use, but you can do residential if you want to on up above on the second floor or behind. You don't have to do it, but it's an option. The CBO is the next one. This is the new zone we talked about a little bit. This is those transition areas between 5th and 8th, and then 11th and 14th. Again, looking at allowing more uses by right and more flexibility in these transitional areas. And one of the biggest thing is you can, as proposed, have a multifamily development that's 100% residential product along that area. That 50% requirement was removed to kind of allow more flexibility and potentially have a little bit higher density or higher intensity residential uses along there. One of the things that we talked about and a standard we added, though, was that if you wanted to put a residential product in, you had to have a little bit wider lot size. So we didn't get little tiny residential things tucked in there. So that's just one of the recommendations there. The next is a neighborhood commercial. Again, the purpose of this or the intent of this is pretty much the same as your existing code. It's really just four places on the general plan map. It allows for that neighborhood commercial in a couple areas, which is, I think, really nice from a neighborhood perspective. A couple of things that were changed for general plan consistency is the 9 dwelling units per acre and then the floor area ratio of 0.75. Right now, the code only allows 1 dwelling unit per lot, but the general plan allows 9 DU per acre, so we made that change, and then we reduced the 50% residential requirement, and you can have residential as long as it's above or behind, just to allow more flexibility. And not, you can do residential, but you don't have to have the 50% max. The office professional zone. This is appropriate professional and general offices in the city. It's a couple of places. Again, a couple of general plan consistency changes here made. And then one other thing is we just made the standard 40 feet max. Right now you can have it, but you have to go through a use permit process. So that's the standard now on the development standard tables. Retail commercial. This is 14th West Grand between 14th and Oath Park. This is really your shopping center area. It was that is currently CS. Again, the intent of this is mostly the same. Some general plan consistency changes. We actually lowered the dwelling units per acre, DU per acre here from 20 to 9 to be consistent with the general plan. It was 20 in the zoning ordinance before, and then we eliminated that 50% residential maximum. Just two more to go through. This is a visitor serving, a coastal visitor serving. These are West Grand around 4th and then over to the beach. Just looking at some of the changes here. So allowing 4 stories, 50-foot max, at West Grand and 4th, just at that corner, was a general plan recommendation. We increased the maximum coverage. It's now 50, but increased it to 50% to allow a little bit higher intensity over there. And again, the 50% residential max was eliminated, and you can have residential, but it has to be above or behind. And then lastly, this is, again, a change to be consistent with the general plan. This is the CC zone. It was a more industrial zone, CIC, but the general plan recommended changing this land use, this designation over time. This is front between First and then front, the area between Front and First and then Front and Beckett, that little sliver kind of going down there. So just looking at more options for uses and services.
Really allow more building design flexibility for potential technology uses. There were no changes to the maximum building heights. They were 35 and 40 feet respectively and allow three-story buildings to begin with. This is really more about the design of the building. If we have all surface parking with a building above, it kind of deviates from our existing floor area ratios and lot coverage. And so this would just be to provide some more flexibility in those two particular zones. And lastly, we made a small decrease in the required landscaping in the industrial zone from 15% to 10% of the lot area. Not much to say about public facilities, parks and rec, open space zones. Again, we made no changes there. Which brings us to our urban reserve zone. This is the zone that basically takes in the existing strawberry fields in the south end of town. Two things to note, we did allow farm worker housing consistent with the housing element. And second, the recommendation is to rezone. There are some residential, agricultural, that RA zone lots fronting on South 4th Street to the urban reserve zone. And this highlights, here's Highland and this is South 4th. You can see the urban reserve zone and there were several lots along South 4th Street. And really, by rezoning them to urban reserve, this would require these lots to have a specific plan approved prior to residential development. And it's really to ensure those lots are comprehensively planned with the entire site to the east and avoid an island of residential, something similar to what you have just to the north of this project at Calvin Street. And then the last zone is the overlay zone, or plan development overlay zone. And currently, the zoning code has three types of overlay zones to allow flexible design standards. We have the West Grand Avenue Corridor Plan Development, we have the Planned Community Development District, and we have the Design Development Combining District. This zoning code would combine all three. We would maintain the purpose of allowing the flexible development standards for projects that provide an amenity or benefit to the city. So the result is a PD overlay that can be applied basically anywhere in the city, but quite frankly, it's almost identical to the existing West Grand Avenue overlay. So as a result of that, we would update the zoning map, and there's an Appendix A to our zoning code, to retain only these overlay zones that have restricted uses or specific development standards. There are a lot of these overlay zones that were codified, put in the municipal or the zoning code, which basically were conditions of approval that were long ago implemented. You had to do those things in order to get a final. And so we're really just trying to reduce those and place only these PD overlays that have something that really changes the potential development of the project site. And as an example, the Pocketbook Market at 4th and Brighton, it has a restriction on height and use. And so we didn't, as part of this, our charge was not to change those things. We left those in place. A couple of other things on overlay zones. We did have a floodplain overlay, and we are deleting that and replacing it with an updated flood hazard regulations, which are required by FEMA, and they were added to Chapter 5. Which brings us lastly to emergency shelter overlay. And to give you a little background, in 2007, the state mandated that every city provide an area that could allow emergency shelters for homeless in their communities. The state law does not require that the emergency shelter be constructed in the area selected by the council. It just mandates the city zone an area that will allow them, if the property owner elects, to go forward with that use. Last year, if you recall, staff came to the council and sought direction on a proposed location before drafting the ordinance. The council directed that the western portion of the urban reserve zone and some of that RA zone we just talked about, again, here is Highland to the north, South 4th, and this is the southern boundary of the city. So that was the proposed location by council. The Planning Commission, in reviewing this and considering public comment, recommended that the overlay area actually be relocated to the north in a portion of the existing industrial area. So here is Farrell, again, South 4th, Highland here, and then this hatched area is the Planning Commission recommendation for that. As a result of allowing live, work, and commercial zones, currently live, work is only permitted in industrial zones, so we made some adjustments there. We also revised the non-conforming parking standards for residential additions, and this would allow additions of 40% of the existing residential unit or 500 square feet, whichever is greater, before triggering the requirement for a two-car garage. So we have a lot of one-car garages, even homes with no garages, and currently, if you have a one-car garage and you want to do an addition, we allow it limited at 150 square feet. And the issue there is 150 square feet is barely one bedroom. And so this would provide a little more flexibility to allow people to invest and expand their homes. We've set this threshold at 40%. That's consistent with our street improvement threshold. Staff added in the extra or 500 square feet, whichever is greater. As you know, we have homes in the city that are 600 square feet, so adding 500 square feet seemed reasonable, but the council may want to discuss those thresholds further. And lastly, we revised the non-conforming parking standards for existing commercial buildings in two zones, the coastal visitor serving on Grand Avenue between the beach and 5th, and in the central business zone, 8th to 11th on Grand Avenue, to allow more parking-intensive uses such as restaurants. Technically, today, if you have a small building and you have no parking on your site in the downtown, and you have historically been a retail or office use, when you come in and you would want to convert that to a restaurant, it requires more parking. And technically, the code says you need to provide parking. But where do you do that on a site that has no parking? So we felt in these two particular zones where we're trying to create these activity nodes and we want to attract restaurants that this would be two logical places to loosen that parking standard. Chapter 4, Standards for Specific Development and Land Uses. We did create new standards for large family daycare homes. These are homes, daycare with 6 or 8 children or greater, which are regulated by the city, as well as recycling facilities. And basically, we did that to address potential impacts. So we created some standards that would hopefully mitigate any negative impacts of those types of uses. We also added live entertainment standards, basically to allow background music at restaurants. Currently, all entertainment requires a use permit. We're trying to encourage that. So we set a reasonable standard to allow what I call background music associated with restaurants. And lastly, we added standards for outdoor storage and work areas to require screening, typically by fencing and or landscaping. We also created lengthy new development standards to regulate telecommunication facilities. For example, cellular towers, we have basically no regulations. These are in-depth regulations. We also revised the mixed-use standards, as Lisa mentioned, to eliminate that requirement for 50% maximum residential area, and again, to allow them behind commercial or above commercial uses. Again, on the live-work standards, we did revise some of the development standards, such as allowing employees to encourage live-work units. Currently, live-work did not allow to have any employees. This would give the review authority, the commissioner or council, some discretion to allow employees at a live-work situation. We also reduced the regulations for sidewalk seating for restaurants in order to encourage that use. Currently, it was only allowed in the central business zone of the downtown. We also expanded that to allow it in visitor serving and some other zones along Grand Avenue as well. And lastly, we clarified the difference between resale stores, which offer a variety of collectibles and goods, versus a thrift store, which is primarily household discards. I don't know the history, but the council had adopted in the past a minimum separation of 1,000 feet for thrift stores to avoid an undue concentration. And we do have limited thrift stores, but what we have seen are what we are defining as resale stores, quite a few. It's partly, I think, a marketing trend as well as just reusing the use of reused items. Chapter 5, as previously noted, the site development standards, we added the new flood hazard regulations consistent with FEMA. No changes were made to the other sections to reflect all of the new uses and bring them up to date. A couple of zoning map changes I just wanted to highlight. One Lisa touched on, this coastal commercial zone, which is basically the major area is along Front to Beckett between Ramona and Atlantic City. This entire area previously had been zoned CIC, Coastal Industrial Commercial. In the land use element update, the council retained these properties in the CIC. The rest of this area, the land use designation changed to visitor serving mixed use. Rather than applying the visitor serving zone that we have on Grand Avenue, which has different characteristics. At Grand Avenue, obviously a lot of traffic. The development standards in here would allow buildings up to four stories, up to 40 feet or three stories. So staff took a little bit of a different approach, recognizing that this area is sitting off of Grand Avenue and is different. We created this new zone. It has a much a greater variety of types of uses, expanding into office and some of the uses that are not necessarily preferred or allowed in the visitor serving on the ground floor. And so there have been several comments from property owners in this section. Obviously, going from an industrial to a commercial zone creates existing industrial users. They become legal nonconforming. And, for instance, you did receive a letter tonight from one of the property owners in that area. So it may be something that the council wants to discuss in more detail. And then lastly, the area bounded by Long Branch, Manhattan, and 12th to 14th Streets. Again, Long Branch, Manhattan, 12th to 14th. This was an area in the land use element update. The majority of it, the yellow, if you will, changed to neighborhood commercial mixed use, and there was some low density or R1 that would remain in the far eastern portion. And when we came to the council with the initial zoning code update to bring these things into consistency with the general plan, this was the one that the council looked at. And actually directed it to go back to the Planning Commission for further discussion or look at possible alternatives. The conclusion of that is that the Planning Commission is recommending that the entire area be rezoned to R3 with a land use designation of high density residential. I have the aerial here, the block bounded by 12th and 13th here. Very underdeveloped, some industrial users, service commercial users, only a couple of existing single-family homes. So much more open to a future redevelopment. The area between 13th and 14th and Long Branch and Manhattan, predominantly single-family homes, a duplex here. Because of the commercial zoning, you have an office or two. There are some underdeveloped lots along 13th Street, but we left all these alternatives for the Planning Commission. It could be a combination of R3, and even to the east, it could be reduced to an R2 or R1 zone for some portion. So, again, the recommendation is to go to R3, but that may be something that the council wants to discuss in more detail. Just kind of wrapping things up, the general plan amendment associated with this does propose changes to the land use map. There are a few corrections to the text to reflect a few of the zoning map changes and some general cleanup. In addition, the local coastal program, again, is amended just to simply reflect or import the new land use and zoning designations that are part of this update process. And lastly, as I mentioned, an initial study and draft negative declaration were prepared for the project. I want to point out that the majority of this zoning code update is considered a subsequent project and was anticipated and analyzed as part of that master EIR that was prepared for the land use element update. This basically means the potential environmental impacts associated with the zoning code update were already analyzed and mitigations implemented as part of the adoption of the land use element. Therefore, the initial study did conclude that the proposed project would not have a significant impact on the environment. So in conclusion, the Planning Commission recommended approval of the zoning code update and the related applications. The Commission did recommend some revisions that were mentioned in the staff report, and those have been incorporated into the current copy of the development code that you have tonight. I'll also point out that the recommendation includes that the zoning code update for areas that are not in the coastal zone.
Boy, I have a lot. I don't even really know where to start. Maybe I'll just start briefly, and then we can go on and come back.
So I was wondering, so maybe see if there's any questions on the residential zones, and then we'll come back to commercial. Maybe we can do it in
okay.
a little more uniform way that way.
Okay,
So let's talk about the residential zones.
Residential zones. I have one question in particular regarding changing of the mobile home zone to an R1. Can you just elaborate on that a little bit? So we're not going to restrict existing mobile homes or modular homes from those areas, from that area.
Correct. State law changed several years ago. It actually cannot prevent the placement of a modular mobile home in an R1 zone. So by rezoning at R1, the only thing you're really allowing, or the only change, is that you would allow conventional stick-built construction, which, strangely enough, in this zone is not permitted. So it's only an opportunity for people to build conventional construction. It will still allow modular and mobile homes.
Okay. Thank you. And then there was the area on Ramona, south side of Ramona, between 4th and 5th and 5th and 8th. There was a discussion about changing it, but we kept it at R3. Can you talk to me about that just a little bit?
Sure. The land use element update changed the land use designation, and I don't have a great blow up, but for the area between 2nd Street all the way to 8th Street, there was it was zoned R3 historically. The land use designation was changed to visitor serving mixed use, or as you kind of move down West Grand Avenue, it transitions to central business. But all of those lots fronting on Ramona would be changed. What the Planning Commission recommendation is to keep the lots on the south side of Ramona between 2nd and 4th. Those would actually implement the land use designation. They would be changed to visitor serving mixed use. The one, and I think it's the only deviation from the adopted land use map, would be to change the lots on the south side of Ramona between 4th and 8th, rather than changing the zoning to visitor serving or central business to be consistent with the land use designation. This one is the commission recommendation is leave it as R3, the current zoning, and you would be changing the land use designation back to high density residential. So, in essence, you're leaving what's historically been in place rather than the vision that was determined as part of the land use element update to go to all visitor serving or commercial use.
Okay.
And this is just, it's one row of lots. They all front onto Ramona.
Mm-hmm. And they're on the south side.
South side of Ramona.
Okay. Okay, I think that's all I have for residential at this point in time.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, that same thing applies to south side of Ramona between 5th and 8th also. Same?
4th to 8th is the area that would remain R3. And
okay.
So the only change in the zoning would really be between 2nd and 4th on the south side
correct.
Of Ramona.
Okay. 4th to 8th stays R3.
Correct.
Changes in from 2 to 4.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
I'm thumbing through to see which of these are residential. I have a lot related to mixed use and live work, but I think those also include business, so maybe we could go to those later. The other one that I'm wondering about is what was the reason that, well, I guess we eliminated needlessly because it was hard to define needlessly on blocking, on obstructing views?
That's been the Planning Commission's struggle, mm-hmm. and again, I don't know the history, but when the finding or determination mm-hmm. needs to be made, the typical staff analysis is pictures from surrounding residences. We have, of course, the story polls in place, and we're able to quantify to the best of our ability as well. That's, you know, we can demonstrate the future addition or new two-story home is going to block a view, but substantially has been easier for them to define, you know, is it this much of the view or is it this much of the view? They have just struggled with needlessly. What is needlessly? I mean, it could all be needless. Why even do the second story addition? But mm-hmm. Again, that is their recommendation to try to simplify and better be more precise about what it is they're trying to evaluate. Kind of transition to a pocket of residential, and then you're transitioning back, at least on the western portion of that, to coastal commercial. And I think, I can't speak for the council, but I think the long-term vision was that you have the potential on 2nd Street because of its proximity to the beach that, you know, that could end up being a commercial development or a pedestrian mall or something in that location. Whereas I think as you move further to the east in the area 4th through 8th, you know, that whole area is going to transition to R3. Whether you draw the line mid-block or whether you draw it along the south side of Ramona, you are definitely transitioning to an R3 neighborhood to the north side. So those are the two differences, I would say, between those stretches on Ramona. But that's certainly a council decision whether to move forward with the land use element or to direct a change there.
So then the houses that are on that section, are you saying that they would no longer be residential?
They would become legal non-conforming uses. So, again, just as I mentioned in the CC zone, there have been a few letters received in your packet regarding concerns. Anytime you change a zone from a residential to commercial or commercial to industrial, there are going to be uses that are going to become legal non-conforming. And there are definite limitations on what you can do when you are a legal non-conforming use.
And then the problem is what happens to the homes on the north side. I mean, now they are going to be facing commercial.
Correct.
Okay. My other question was about how going four stories is going to affect the residential on the other side. For example, if you put four stories on the north side of Grand, and then what about the homes that are on the south side on Ramona? You're going to have a problem with blocking solar, all kinds of issues.
Again,
because are we talking about something on the magnitude of Beach Place?
Beach Place would be three stories. The building at the northwest corner of 4th, South 4th, and Rockaway would be four stories.
Okay.
Again, staff took its direction from the adopted land use element, which specifically talks about pockets of four-story building potential. So 4th and Grand was specifically identified in the land use element, and the Planning Commission recommendation was to further expand that into the downtown core between 8th and 11th.
Well, I would request that we talk a little bit about that and when we talk about commercial then, because I think that's way
okay.
too high. My other thought is I was looking at the development standards, And I did notice that on the R1, the rear setback is only 10 feet. I don't understand where that, I was not involved when that change was made. But if you look at a residential house and its lot coverage, do you know what I'm talking about here? Okay. I really think that we need to look at that and revise that back at least to 15 feet, if not back to its original 20. Because if you're talking about families and quality of life, you want a place in the backyard for those kids to play in. And I really think we need to discuss that at this time. This would be a perfect opportunity to look at changing that back to at least a minimum of 15, if not back to 20, because I do not think that that will interfere with the building size.
Okay.
All right. And then the other thing I wanted to discuss, and that's the OP section on Ramona about all of those residential homes. And I really think that, I don't know if we do this now or when we talk about the commercial section between 13th and 9th or 11th there.
Okay.
About how that could at least become CBO so that it could remain residential. And any of those properties, when they want to sell them, they could at least do that with the idea that they could continue to have residential, because commercial makes no sense, or even office makes no sense along there.
Okay.
All right. And then the final thing is the change from RA to R1. I know along the section on Farrell, I went around and looked there. Right now, those homes, they have the ability to have animals, horses. What happens in the future for them if that changes to R1?
The animal regulations are based on lot sizes, so the zone wouldn't currently affect the ability to keep horses. I think horses is actually 1 acre, and with the exception of a few, most of these are all less than 1 acre.
Okay, so then that large one that's going to be fronting the new 16th Street, that's more than 1 acre there.
I'm the first thing I reviewed was the Planning Commission's findings, and I wanted to go over the vehicle repairs and services. I wasn't entirely clear on where those would now be allowed.
Really, there's no change. Vehicle okay. repair and services are only allowed in the CS zone or commercial service zone between 14th and Oak Park.
So when I take my car down to the wonderful little Toy Works down on South 4th, which seems to me to be just a fantastic place to get my car fixed.
Yeah, I should clarify that auto repair is allowed in the industrial zone, and
okay.
therefore you do see
there are a lot of
down there. Yeah.
Great little car repair
yeah.
places. Okay, thank you. That was really all I was worried about, that all those places down there could keep fixing my car for me. Thank you. Okay. And then I'm going to dive into, well, there are a couple of things that are critical, and I know we have an audience member that's worried about one of them. I am very concerned about the what happens to the very viable businesses that we have in what was an industrial zone. And I know we've made some concessions for Brad Ford's property and not changed that one out because he had already been as it were, grandfathered in or approved for certain developments there. But we've got people who've already been approved for certain businesses there, and I'm the person who first said, let's do visitor serving there. We've got people like Velo, who are the top bicycle exercise sportswear business in the nation, the most prolific in the nation for bike wear, and I think we could argue that's visitor serving. They do have a retail outlet there. I want to make sure that we're not chasing businesses off. The last thing we want to do if we're doing economic development is chase businesses off. And so people who've invested in land and invested in their businesses, I do want to make sure that by making the change, we're not going to have a net loss of business. So I wanted to take a look at that and see just a little bit more on that. And one of the gentlemen, I believe is here tonight, gave us a letter saying that, you know, it's happened to him once before and he doesn't want it to happen again, that we say it'll be okay, we'll grandfather him in, and then 10 years from now it's a different council and things change again. So are there any safeguards built in to protect businesses in that situation?
Not really. I mean, you become a legal nonconforming use. Again, as we mentioned, currently that's 1 year for abandonment of a use. Mm-hmm. If it's reduced as proposed to 180 days, that makes that window less. In the case of a light industrial user, that would mean basically if that business left, that business owner would have 180 days to replace it with another light manufacturing use in order to keep that legal nonconforming status. So there are, I don't know if the council wants to take public comment, but I mean there are some alternatives that staff can provide the council at your election.
When we finish with questions, I'm certainly going to go to the public and allow them to ask questions and get clarification.
And I have some comments on that too, and I'll reserve those for later. My other questions are all, most of them revolve around the mixed use and the live work, and I wonder if you could explain a couple of things a little more clearly. What's the difference between mixed use and live work?
Basically, I would tell you that a live work is an owner within the building that has a business within the building, and usually because of that, there is an internal connection because the owner wants access to the business. But that residential unit could be behind the work area. It could be upstairs. The clear distinction is with a mixed use, now you're talking about commercial, typically on the ground floor, with residential above, and like Beach Place as an example, you have independent access to all those residential units above the commercial use. So, again, typically the live-work unit smaller space, business and residential owner, all one and the same.
So mixed use is usually a bigger development, and live work is usually at one freestanding?
Typically, yes.
Okay. And so is it true, and is live work the same as the mixed use that you you can have it above or behind but not next to or not in front?
In both cases, the intent is, especially in the commercial zones, we want that commercial presence on Grand Avenue. Mm-hmm. So that use needs to be up back of sidewalk. Mm-hmm. Recognizing that some of these parcels have a lot of depth, commercial can only be so in those particular ones, not the live work.
Okay, so basically mixed use anywhere?
Any even commercial in zone.
Any commercial zones,
zone. Yes.
Okay, all right. And couple of questions on the live work. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm trying to understand this. It says that your spouse can live there, or your registered partner. What about your kids? Can you have children and live in a live work unit?
Yeah, I would have to read the section.
Okay.
But certainly the intent
I'd like you to go back. Could we check that out? Because what if your spouse becomes pregnant? Do you get kicked out of your live work unit?
We don't regulate that.
I just want to make sure that we don't.
Give us a chance to go back and look
okay.
at that.
And then the other question on going to people having businesses in their homes, one of the restrictions that's been placed on it is you can't have an employee. And I'd like us to talk about that later. That's not a question. That's correct, is it? That you can't.
Correct. Okay. And we made no changes. The current mm-hmm. home occupation permit mm-hmm. limitations are that no employees are allowed to come to the house. It's basically a business that's resident
home
operated. But that's certainly something for the council to discuss.
Okay. Well, those are the most. I have a lot of comments for discussion, and I believe those are my questions for the time being.
Okay, Councilmember Mona.
I did mention a couple of items earlier, probably mm-hmm. at the wrong time, which was the height of the buildings, four stories, and then the on Ramona, changing that from OP to at least CBO, which would allow all residential.
Okay. Vice Mayor Nichols.
I have answered.
Councilmember Bright?
Yes, please. Can you describe to me what adaptive reuse is?
Fancy planning term for you have an existing building that's industrial and it gets converted to mixed use. It's just adapting a different use within the same building.
I see. Okay. And then what is artisan manufacturing? Who determines what the artisan factor is of the manufacturing?
Right. And again, this was purposely included in that coastal commercial zone, recognizing that it might be a place to attract that type of use. There's a lengthy discussion on artisan manufacturing. I think it's manufacturing / artisan, but it's ceramics, glass blowing, things that are
so
handcraft.
Like woodworking?
There's a fine line, quite frankly. I mean, if someone were to come in and be making some kind of custom woodworking where there's only, you know, it's more by hand versus if you're making cabinets, that's a light industrial use. So I would say most woodworking is going to come under light industrial, but
okay.
I would say the artisan is really more something that's handcrafted.
Okay. And where would I find that?
In the definitions on page 9-9.
Thank you.
I had a couple other questions when everybody else was
okay.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's all for now.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
Going back to my live-work units or my live-above-the-shop units, so in you could have it in any commercial area, and in many cases you'd need a use permit. What does a use permit cost?
Well, a use permit is a discretionary application that comes before the Planning Commission. That depends. If you have an existing building, we're reviewing just the change in the use, and that's something that's more simple as far as the time to review that. I would say that a typical use permit like that is $1,000 to $1,200. If you are proposing a brand new development, that's a significant more review time by staff and the Planning Commission. It could be twice that much.
Okay.
I remember that all of our applications are time and materials, so it does depend. The more complex project, it's just cost recovered by staff. You know, there are other communities that charge a flat rate. I won't name any of our neighboring cities, but they might charge you $3,000 for the first one that I indicated, just a use permit to change a use in an existing building. There are other vehicles like a license, but
our point is we want to encourage these and reduce the red tape as much as possible.
And what do they cost?
An encroachment permit is not much. I mean, that's
okay.
For, yeah,
$100. It's not $1,000, $1,200. Okay. Thank you very much. That's all I have for now. Thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Moore.
Then I have a question. Bringing up sidewalk cafes, what about, I've seen plenty of businesses along Grand that put merchandise out on the sidewalk. Is that addressed in any of this?
We didn't go there. there are... the zoning code is silent about outdoor display of merchandise. So we did include standards for screening, you know, storage and those types of things. But, again, technically anything in the sidewalk would require an encroachment permit. And our public works director would tell you that we don't want a lot in our public right-of-way. I mean, again, we're trying to encourage sidewalk seating, but that's one of the only things we're trying to encourage.
So then what happens with stores that do that?
If merchandise is in the sidewalk, the public right-of-way, that would be a code violation, and we would ask them to remove that.
And what portion is the public right-of-way again?
10 feet. So there are some areas along Grand Avenue that...
Go ahead and answer, and then we're going to go
see. That are perhaps not in the public right-of-way. They're behind the sidewalk, and they are on private property.
All right, thank you.
City Manager.
And the Community Development Director is correct. A lot of the time, the property line will actually be along the sidewalk itself. And we have worked in the past with businesses to make sure when they're having outdoor displays that they do those displays within what is really private property.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have any general questions? The public is here and they've been waiting patiently. I'd like to hear what they have to say.
I have a general request. Okay. May we have just a 5-minute break before we start, please? Or I can just go by myself.
No, that's fine. But I would like staff to just clarify. Mm-hmm. We've been hearing administrative use permit. Maybe just make the distinction for folks who've been listening. Then after that, we'll take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back, and I'll open it up to the public and get their input.
Sure. A use permit does require a public hearing before the Planning Commission to approve the project. An administrative use permit is a somewhat streamlined approach. We still have to notice, and we have a public hearing, but basically I, as a community development director, oversee that. Those are usually would typically be non-controversial types of uses that we just want to ensure that the operating characteristics are consistent with the surrounding properties. And now we have this new administrative development permit, which it doesn't address uses as much, but it would allow a staff review of minor additions and so forth.
Very good. So with that, let's take a 5-minute break. Let's reconvene at 8:17. We're going to reconvene. You hear that? We're going to reconvene the regular meeting of the Gover Beach City Council for Monday, August 6, 2012, and we are in fact discussing the comprehensive update to our zoning code.
I don't think your mic's on.
Oh wait, Donna's not here.
No.
That's
oh.
why.
Oh, Donna,
the most important person of all.
Shame on me.
Ready, set, go.
How's that? Oh, perfect. Thank you, Janet. Let the record show that that's the first time that's ever happened. So I think we're good. You ready? Okay. All right, we're going to reconvene the meeting. And at this point, I'm going to open this up to the public and see if there's anyone that would like to address the item before the council. Please come forward and state your name and city of residence for the record.
Good evening. My name is Mike Pryor. But I don't want to deal with commercial property that's not adaptable, literally not adaptable to the zoning change that they're making. If it was adaptable, I wouldn't be here dealing with the issue. It's a major warehouse building that doesn't conform in any way with the proposal zoning change. I'm looking for a resolution. What would it take for me to be assured that I can use my property? I don't know. From past experience, I'm very concerned about it. I'm open for a solution to the problem. Not becoming the problem. But on the other hand, I'm very opposed to this proposition because of my particular situation. Directly across the street from my property, there will be the industrial zone. And, you know, directly across the street, I'm taking a property that doesn't fit the new zone and having to deal with the, with that situation. So, what more can I say?
Okay, thank you, Mike.
All right, thank you.
We've got your comment noted.
Good evening. My name is Peter Keith. My mailing address is 865 Charles in Grover Beach. I'm a longtime resident of Grover Beach since 1972. Probably qualifies for a long time. I'm here for two purposes. One is to congratulate the Planning Commission and the Planning Department and its staff and consultant. I think overall, with the exception of a statement I'll make following this, it's a really good plan. It's an insightful plan, borders on, I think, genius in how to turn this town away from a Grand Avenue straight shot where the businesses are located on a street that's a major thoroughfare that's traveled at 35 miles per hour by something like 15,000 to 18,000 vehicles a day. I'm extrapolating a little bit from the traffic count from Arroyo Grande on Grand Avenue. So if I'm wrong, forgive me, but I think it's probably fairly close. It appears that what you're trying to do is create something of a grid on Grand Avenue and Grover Beach, meaning a commercial grid. If you're going to take a part of Ramona Avenue and turn the south side of Ramona Avenue from basically 4th, is it 2nd or 4th? From 2nd or 4th to 8th Street, and you're labeling that as a commercial or mixed zone, I've forgotten which it is. What that does in the future, in my estimation, is it turns the possibility of expanding a commercial area into neighborhood areas now, which will eventually serve as a commercial serving area. People like to come to a downtown grid. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily stop often on a straight shot at 35 miles an hour, but they will stop in a downtown grid, as evidenced all over California and all across mm-hmm. this nation, where there is a charming downtown, mm-hmm. and you have the ability to expand one straight shot on Grand Avenue into a matrix of a grid. I think you're on the right track. I think you're doing the right mm-hmm. thing for this community, and I believe that that's how you increase revenue streaming to the community. You increase the opportunities for people to build more businesses and for our residents and visitors to enjoy their town at a higher, more complex level. With that said, I think that turning the CIC area along Frontage Road is perhaps the wrong concept, because we have some of the town's largest industrial production and facilities in that particular area. I'm real concerned that we change that CIC to a visitor-serving mixed use for some of the reasons that Mike Pryor and his son sitting right behind him have expressed both in private and Mike Sr. to this council. This is saying stop. May I have permission to continue for a moment?
Yes.
Thank you. I even wonder if maybe under the scenario that's being proposed here, if it might not be a taking. And I mean a taking by adding lights at night. It adds a vibrancy because people will be walking around. People will be driving in and out. And they will, of course, back up to residential uses that are determined by this new ordinance and zoning change to eventually become commercial user-friendly business service areas. And so as they turn, then that grid develops, and I think we'll be a better community for it. Thank you so much for your attention.
Very good. Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. My name's Paul Bischoff. I live at 888 South 16th Street in Bakersfield. I went to Bakersfield on Wednesday, sorry, in Grover Beach. My comment is just a minor one of consistency in the regard that I love the idea of the CBO zone and the zone allowing on larger lots residential. There was a comment earlier about office space that we can't rent out anyway and that sort of thing. So I really like that idea. The comment that I have is along the lines of the areas that are just outside the CBO zone. In this case, they used to be called CP. Now they're called OP. The areas that border these CBO zones between, it looks like, 11th and 14th approximately, just north of Grand, south of Ramona, and then just to the northwest of that, there's a little chunk as well. The fact that you can do that, you can do residential in the CBO that is right on Grand Avenue, but then those zones, the OP, doesn't allow residential exclusively, seems to me to be a little bit inconsistent. And I would ask that the few residential uses that are allowed in the CBO, which are multifamily dwelling, a residential care facility for the elderly, senior housing, and single room occupancy facility, would be added to the allowed uses in the OP zone and requiring a use permit just like they would require in the CBO. Those four residential uses seem pretty appropriate off of Grand. They certainly would be fine on Grand in this new philosophy, and which I approve of. So it feels like that they would be consistent just off of Grand as well. And so I would ask if you would consider that. That would be great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Paul.
I'm assuming I'm supposed to come up. I'm Brad Ford. I'm at 170 West Grand Avenue. I've been developing here for close to 30 years. I got to say, I've been waiting this for this day forever, for this to come to this point where it's making sense of this whole zoning, because I've had the hardest part of leasing up to this point has been dealing with the zoning. I mean, people will go to the city and they'll come back to me in tears saying, I can't figure it out, this doesn't work. And so it was just a whole process to try to calm them down, try to get things to work, shifting things around, paying for use permits for 20 years over Ramona Square, which was just didn't need to be done in the first place. But I just want to congratulate you. I think it's a great idea. I realize this Front Street is a touchy situation. I try to visualize further out and say, okay, in 20 years, right, where are we really going to be? You've got these ocean views. You think more upscale. You think more high-tech, more smaller, intimate, bringing in maybe more of the visitors, commercial serving stuff. But I understand Mike's situation really well. And I think the issue is him just really needing some assurance that this won't be changed on him later if he's allowed to stay there and it can be passed on to future users. And so I keep on thinking, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? And I think the best thing is to maybe try to really resolve some way to secure that can stay there. And eventually it'll morph. Eventually there will be a turning point where this does go in that direction. But in the meantime, we just have to ride this out and just keep pushing towards this ultimate vision. And it's just going to take a while. But I think everything you're doing is great. And thank you guys so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brad. Good to see you. Anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Greg Nestor, local builder and developer since 83, I guess. I just wanted to urge the City Council to support the Planning Commission's recommendations on the emergencies.
Thank you, Charles. Is there anyone else?
City Council. Hi, Dave Eckbaum, Grover Beach.
I live in a mixed-use development on Grand Avenue. I did it about 30 years ago. It was very controversial at that time. I want to congratulate you on expanding the use of that, encouraging it. And we know we have too much commercial on Grand, and to expand it into some residential, I think, is a very wise decision. But I have been in your shoes, and I think you need to really look at the impact you're having on a few businessmen here to drastically change the zoning on their property is a huge impact on them. And just because you're saying it's grandfathered in, it can be a big deal. If they have a fire, they can't rebuild it. I mean, there's right. And whether it's his or the that big cement building down a block from him or something that does a sportswear.
Hello.
People, you need to you need to look out for people that are here. So you need to figure out some way to keep them comfortable where they're at. So thank you.
Good evening, Sean Scherer. I have property on the El Camino. More of just an informational on some of the areas where you're looking at changing commercial completely to from the residential, where you've talked about residential will be unconforming. They'll also be unconforming for a loan. And so you're going to have also just besides the business people that are displacements with some of your decisions, possibly in the future, you're going to displace some of your residents because their homes won't be able to be refinanced because they won't be able to get burn letters and those kinds of things that will be able to be rebuilt after a fire because then they'll now be zoned for something that needs to be three-story, all these other items. So know that you're not just doing the business community in some of these decisions, you're also doing your constituents. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close this to the public and bring it back to the council. Okay. This is a lot of information tonight.
No kidding.
So we'll do our best to navigate through this. So the Planning Commission's recommendation, and maybe you can put that up on the screen, Bruce.
I'm sorry, Mayor, which one?
Did you have a slide that showed what the Planning Commission's recommendation is on this item? Probably was the last one.
These are the proposed actions, recommendations by the council on all four applications.
And that's the Planning Commission's recommendation.
Yeah. Correct. Adoption okay. of the neg deck and approval of the three applications before the council.
Okay. So let me ask the question. There are some obviously suggested modifications to the zoning code. And a couple that, if the council chooses to go that direction, may mean a change to the general plan or the land use element map. Would that affect the negative declaration?
I mean, it could. We would want to look at those things. I mean, in a lot of cases, or as is the case with most of these changes currently, they are a down zoning, and so we just justify that and it would just need to be added to the negative declaration.
Okay. Well, I guess there's no easy way to do this, so let's just have some discussion. And let's see.
I'd like to, why can't we start with a brief discussion on Mr. Pryor's property? I believe you said it's at Newport in front. Is that correct?
So and how about, let me ask staff a question. Mr. Pryor had raised this question regarding his property. I believe he's on Newport in front, and then I think the Volley property is behind that. So what would be potential some potential options available to the council?
Well, there's certainly a big difference in this area. The areas bounded within Front and Beckett to Newport. Those are all very small lot, though there are some small industrial and service users in there. The largest light industrial users currently are Pryor and Valet to the north. So,
you know, you'd have to differentiate between the CIC and the CC then, but that would be an option.
Yeah, that's those are the options. I agree.
I have a question then?
Yes.
What is the difference between the Ford property and the CIC? Why was that left alone and the other properties changed? What is Ford's use different than the others?
Well, the short answer is that was the council decision to keep those Mr. Ford's property at CIC and or industrial land use designation, and the remaining areas that we're talking about in this proposed CC, the land use designation changed to visitor serving mixed use.
Why?
You were here.
No, I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. I don't think she was
when we did the land use element. No, I was
so
not.
This is always the danger, and I'm going to get on my soapbox now, because this is always the danger when you do a land use element and you bring back zoning to be consistent, because being a general law city, zoning must implement the general plan, and so now we have to go back into the recesses of our memory. Because I know that there was significant discussion on why we would leave a ribbon of CIC and the other CC, but, you know, I'm going to admit I don't recall a lot of that discussion.
You know, to me it doesn't make sense. If why can't that whole section just be left CIC?
Well, I will tell you that part of our discussion and a large driving force is that historically on Beckett's place, on Beckett Street, we have had residents that have come forward and there have been conflicts between them and some straight industrial uses right across the street. And it's not just whether it's air emissions, but there have been issues with parking. And so trying to address that is trying to find a more compatible use with the existing residential. And so I believe the CC was looking at a way to allow more compatible uses in that area. And I know we had a substantial amount of discussion regarding Mr. Pryor's building and the building north of that, and whether that should stay CI or if it should be CC. And I think Lisa has come up with a really good suggestion, is can you expand the youth types of uses in that zone that would allow Mr. Pryor and Valet to continue operating and not compromise the integrity or the intent of the CC zone. With respect to the CI, I'm not sure if that was tailored around Brad's investment, because I know he's had a significant investment down there. I know that it's a little different with Front Street and the railroad tracks.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, not to be rude, but what about these other people's investments?
We're only talking about one right now. We're going to go to some of the others.
Yeah, I know, but you're talking about Mr. Brad's investment. That's starting to get a little personal.
Could I jump in? Hold on. I
used the wrong word. But basically, the difference in that area is obviously Front Street and the railroad tracks and what's there versus residential on the other side. So,
I wanted to jump in and say there were a couple of other things that we discussed about that, not specifically with regard to Mr. Ford's property. One of the other things we looked at was the fact that that area right along there is our gateway. It's our Highway 1 gateway to the city. And when people are coming down Highway 1 to the city from Pismo Beach, they've got the butterflies on one side, they've got a beautiful hotel on the other side, they've got incredible views of the ocean, and then they've got this industrial. And so part of the vision was that we would have visitor serving and we would draw them into the city rather than having industrial. So that was the other part of the vision on that, that it would be something that would attract and draw people. And so I like the idea of moving into a broader, maybe a broader definition. If you think about San Francisco, downtown San Francisco, you've got Monterey, you've got the cannery, which really was warehousing, and you've got Ghirardelli, which was a chocolate factory. And so I think that there are ways, perhaps, okay, warehousing, I'm sure you're not warehousing chocolate at the moment. Well, I hope you are, but I think you're probably not. But I think that, you know, we could have perhaps a broader vision. I think there's probably a solution that there's got to be a solution. You guys can figure this one out that gives allows us to have a vision and in the long term develop something that draws people in, tourists in to our city. And Volé is perfect. It's this fabulous recreational business that does some retail work there, but at the same time they do a lot of production. That's exciting. They could probably do factory tours and we could bring people in for factory tours. You know, there's a lot of fun things we could do around all that.
Yeah, I would like to comment. I think you're absolutely correct. You refresh my memories of some of the discussions we had insofar as creating that commercial visitor area. And I do think expanding the definition to allow those two businesses to continue to operate there, whatever has to be done, I think that's the way we should.
Is one option. To go halfway is another option that would pick up Mr. Pryor's property and Volé property, or to expand the uses that would be allowed in that area. So when I read the CIC zone, it says basically the area is appropriate for technology businesses, custom and light manufacturing, and assembly, and similar and compatible uses where all operations are conducted within the building. The area is also appropriate for office uses, live-work, recreational uses, and similar and compatible uses. All development shall be consistent with the city's local coastal program. Does that describe Mr. Pryor's business?
I agree, yes. I think that's fine. So we can expand that CIC area.
Well, what's the difference between CIC and the CC? I mean, I don't have those definitions in front of me, and I don't even know where to find them. Can you help me with that?
I would say it just goes back to what the underlying land use designation is. Remember, the land use designation is the big picture. Industrial land use designation is implemented by the coastal industrial commercial, the CIC zone. It allows industrial uses and it allows commercial uses. The visitor serving mixed use is something that is more retail, commercial, office uses, and residential. So from there, those are the two big picture items. Now the question is what zone, and again, the CC was created to implement that visitor serving mixed use. The CIC is to implement the industrial. So, you know, what I'm hearing is that that some kind of hybrid might be the ideal zone for this area. Which land use designation we apply it back to is something we may need to work on, or is there a new land use designation that would better describe this area?
Well, may I?
Yes.
I do like the idea of a buffer between, whether it be First. So if, but then again, I don't know. I have not driven that area, so I don't know what currently exists on First and Atlantic. There may be, or First and Saratoga in that area. There may be other light industrial businesses that, you know, are dependent upon staying there. So I think we need to really kind of look at that whole thing before we just start kind of piecemealing certain projects or, you know, just certain parcels. I think we need to really focus in on what's there and what would be the most feasible way to, certainly we want to incorporate, I think, the prior property and the other property. It's it just makes sense to me. They've been here forever. They're part of our tax base. It's not something I think we'd want to dilute in any way, shape, or form. But talking about a buffer, I think we just need to determine where that buffer is going to be and what we might be displacing by putting in that buffer. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does.
Is it possible to shoot this down if it doesn't work? Is it possible to do something like, say, I know we say, you know, if it burns down, you can't rebuild it, so who's going to insure you? But is it possible to say, if you sell it, then it moves? to. Of course, if you sell your business, then you can't sell your business. So maybe that I just talked myself out of that one. Never mind.
I think, why can't we expand the CIC to that those two properties, that area? The areas that you're talking about, Bright, there's the most residential and apartment buildings in that other area.
Right,
further
there.
Down, first and
right,
front,
right
areas like that, yeah. There's no commercial in that area. So I would recommend that we expand the CIC area to include those properties and continue to have the visitor serving area as a buffer zone. I think that's a good idea. So that would be my recommendation.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Okay, so basically the area north of Newport and between First and Front, correct? And south of Atlantic.
I sure would like to see what else is there. Do we have a bird's eye view of that that would show us if how many people's how many people are not going to be able to refi their homes if we do that?
Janet can do it.
While we're waiting, I wanted to say thank you to the folks who came tonight. I know a lot of them have gone home now, but it's hugely important to have, and I don't think any of us called anyone to come, but it's really hugely important to have participation. It helps us make better decisions. I'm very grateful to all of you who got out tonight and gave us your input.
This is excellent. No, not at all. Okay.
Oh, that's Velo.
There we are.
Volley.
Cool beans.
Mm-hmm. Or Volley, not Velo. Volley.
So we just want to go
Volley.
Okay, is that prior?
We want to go up to Atlantic and First. Mm-hmm.
Come down to Newport. See Newport.
There we go.
There are a lot of homes in there. Oh, not over to First there aren't, are there?
Mm-hmm.
Not to First.
Yeah, there's homes on the east side.
Between First and Second.
East side
yeah.
of First. So they're all homes.
So on the west side, all along there, that could be a buffer.
So that's Malay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know the exact boundaries of Friar. Is that First or is this?
Yep. That's
right
correct.
There?
Yes.
Okay, but the boundary is there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did the council want to look at this area down here, or are we just concentrating on this?
I'd say let's just concentrate on that.
No.
A consensus I'm hearing is either expand the uses or expand the CIC
yeah.
up to that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously any future development's going to have to get probably a use permit, and staff's going to have a review to look at any potential conflicts or nuisances to the residential on the other side of the street. Okay? Now, the one thing I do want to say, and I'm someone who's had quite a bit of experience in doing this sort of thing, is the general plan, and I think Dave left, but we're trying to look 20 years out. We certainly aren't trying to have unintended consequences on the existing businesses, and so changing the zoning doesn't mean that you would have to stop operating a business. And if we can find ways to give you more options, which allows you to have some flexibility down the road, I think that's what we're trying to accomplish. Now, that said, we can't tie future council's hands. And I think, Mike, you've been through that process before. So we'll do the best we can, but there are no assurances we can give anyone because this council changes over every 2 years. And as a matter of fact, it's going to change over in 2 months, 3 months. Anyway, so I think we are at least given staff direction on this. So I just want to make sure that the CIC, does that cause us to have to change the land use element designation to maintain consistency?
In this particular case, if you take the properties and actually keep the CIC zoning in place, we would just be simply changing the land use designation from visitor serving back to industrial. Because that was the existing land use before we went through the land use element update, we would argue there's no additional environmental review. You're really not changing anything.
Okay.
So from that perspective, if the council wanted to move forward, it's really just establishing what the exact boundary would be. We would simply delete the zone change to CC. There would be no zone change. It would remain CIC. And we would just add in simply the land use designation change from visitor serving mixed use back to industrial. The mayor does raise one issue, and that is that the CIC zone, because it applied just to the Ford property and it was going to have, and it had a commercial, coastal commercial boundary to the east, we made all those light industrial uses in those buildings permitted. We also basically had uses that didn't have outdoor storage because all of the buildings that Mr. Ford has, everything is contained within those. That's probably the case for Valet as well. Because
and understanding that we're trying to accommodate existing uses, and, you know, I don't know down the road 20 years from now when somebody's property sale, hopefully we will have someone that's reviewing projects for their impacts on the neighborhood, because obviously that's a challenge in Grover Beach with residential next to some straight industrial uses. And I know Mr. Pryor does everything indoors, as does Valet, but not all industrial uses are the same. So
what about direction as to where that boundary is going to be? Have we done that?
Well, I thought the suggestion was to go to First, Atlantic City, to First, to Newport, and Front. Or
well,
is that not?
Well, I was thinking, just my thought, was that there would be, if we could have some sort of a buffer between the residents on First Street. So, along that property line, and then on up. But I don't know what those other, I don't know what those that property use is.
Adjacent to Pryor is more commercial. I think that entire block is commercial. There might be one small home in there. That's commercial in there.
Okay. Well, I don't think it would affect the home because it's already in a commercial area,
right.
Industrial area.
Right. I think we should take the whole block. Well, now that block, I'm not sure of, because there is residential on the far corner, on the, what would you call it, northeast corner?
Okay.
Up there.
I thought we were talking of, my concern are the two blocks on First at Newport and Saratoga. So Atlantic, Saratoga, and then it ends at Newport. So that those two blocks right there, yeah. So I'm thinking if we could have some sort of a buffer where you could put that line like 3/4, yep, right down, if that's a property line, like that, that would be a buffer between the CIC and then the CC and then the residential. Does that make any sense? I don't know what my fellow council people think, that too involved.
It makes sense. My only concern is who's there already.
Yep.
I think that the neighbors would appreciate a buffer, but I don't know who's there already and how it affects them. So, although they haven't come to holler at us, so.
Well, Yes. We're being consistent, even if they're here, if they're not here, if that's what the direction we're going, then we should do that. So
that's what I'd like to see. If the rest of you would support that.
Yeah.
If it's doable.
Any objections to what she's suggesting?
No, because actually that's very similar to what we talked about on Ramona between second and third. Okay, that was going to be CVS, which I still don't agree with, but basically that would be the same thing, mm-hmm. as you're saying that the that would be the west side of First between Atlantic and Newport would be CC, and then the properties behind that would be CIC.
Right.
So wherever those bordering property lines are would be CC. I don't know if that makes it too complicated. Otherwise, just make it all CIC like it is now. People who live there already know that's there.
The people that live there now don't have a problem. They'd be down here.
Just leave it all CIC, those two blocks. It's probably
that's
the simplest thing to do. Then maybe in the future, as uses change, then that area could be looked at again.
Well, we have had people come here to discuss that particular issue. I know that, but
so to help to unwind us from around this axle, general plan and zonings are dynamic documents, and quite honestly, any owner can come forward in 6 months or a year or 2 years and say, this doesn't work for me, and request a general plan, a land use and a zone change. Because I suspect that whatever direction we go, even if we create a buffer, the folks who are currently operating in industrial use will hear about this, and then they'll come down later and write a letter. So we really have to decide what do we want this community to look like, and hopefully over time we get there. Now, that said, I don't feel strongly one way or the other. If we're going to go CIC and you want to create a buffer, that's fine. I think the question that I would have is the depth of the lots, and does that allow for a nice design to provide a buffer? But if we're talking light industrial uses,
about those interfaces, so I think that Council Molnar, I think that buffer is will be helpful in that situation.
Do you believe though that those properties would be large enough for us? For a decent development? I'm asking. I'm sorry.
The coastal commercial zone being, if that was to be the buffer, I mean, does allow office uses. There are a lot of small lots. There are a lot of small lots south of here as well. So, the likely type of infill development is going to be small mixed use. It may be office downstairs with residential upstairs. Mm-hmm. So I can't address the timing of the redevelopment. I mean, that's
right.
Obviously been the issue in this entire area historically.
Okay.
So I think we've got consensus to move forward with keeping the area between Newport and Atlantic City Front Street, and then... Yeah, that would sort of be the boundary of CIC. Well, not the whole. I don't think the whole thing, but yeah.
Yep.
So maintaining a buffer of CC between the
I think that's
CIC
what I'm hearing
and the residential.
The majority of the council members, yes.
At some point, staff would recommend if we could at the next break, if we could look at the assessor parcel maps. We don't want to draw a zoning boundary. If you want to take this action tonight, if the direction
I would say let's not do that tonight. I think you've got general direction, and you're going to have to come back to us anyway and try and find a boundary that makes sense in a particular location. Okay. So then let's move down, and I did want to talk about this Ramona Avenue. And I can tell you the discussion, and Bruce, you were right, regarding between 2nd and 4th Street, was to try and provide some depth to the commercial area, but also the problem that we have been running into is that people using, bringing truck traffic in there were not necessarily coming down to Grand, but coming down on Ramona. And by changing the zoning would allow that area in time, because there is a mini storage there, there's some spot residential, and we don't have a lot of depth to the commercial area. That's, I think, the reason we had done that. And it even allows for the opportunity to do something like they do in San Luis on Mill Street, where you've got houses that have been converted into offices across from the courthouse, and minimizing impacts from these large trucks driving on a residential street. And that's why it was from 2nd to 4th and then changed back to residential on the other side of 4th to 8th. That was the logic.
How do you keep trucks off of there?
You can't keep trucks off of there because trucks are getting into where Mr. Pryor's business is, where Mr. Ford's business is, and in that industrial area, their primary route is actually coming down 4th, over on Ramona, and then up Front Street. And so because of that truck traffic, and if that area becomes as successful as we're hoping, then allowing residential to continue to be there would create noise nuisances and things of that nature. And that was why there was that discussion about changing that area to a more of a commercial or mixed use.
What about the gentleman's comment from Sure Realty about not being able to get loans and that type of thing?
Do you guys want to approach that? Because, you know, this is not something unique to Grover Beach. All cities go through this when they're trying to do planning in advance. And so I'm not quite sure how to respond to that.
I would simply say it comes back to what the long-term vision is. If you make the commitment to the long-term vision, you are going to have legal non-conforming uses. If you keep the existing zoning, then you're not trying to move forward. So it's always an issue when uses become non-conforming. I'm not aware of lending issues regarding single-family homes and commercial zones. I can say there are numerous residential units within commercial zones in this city. So,
okay. All right, thank you. That was just a thought.
I was concerned when he raised that point, because I mean, if that's really the case of how everyone operates, then no one would do future planning and allow us, because the whole idea is, at some point, people will move, people will want to do something different, and so what do you ultimately want the community to look like? And
by somebody that has a residence, even though they're legal nonconforming, to not have a home occupation or a home-based business. So doesn't really relate to the discussion here.
I got you. Okay, I'm on it now. Okay, thank
you. Okay. So then let's move down to the other end of Ramona, and I think Councilman Ramona had brought up the Office of Professional Use that is in between, looks like, 11th and 14th, and maybe expanding the CBO to include that.
And what about between 10th and 11th? It also is open.
Yeah, I'm going there. Okay. I'm getting there.
I'm in favor of that. I think that makes good sense. I'm in favor of being as flexible as we can, because we know that Grand Avenue can't support commercial all the way along and nothing else. So I can see if we've got mixed-use developments in the office professional, then we also can have offices and professional buildings there too. They can work together. They support one another.
Okay.
I don't see why not.
So then the small area between 10th and 11th, and I'm wondering, does that make sense to make that CBO, or should that be more of an R3 use?
Oh, yeah, probably R3, because it is on the other side of the street.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yep, that's a good point.
Okay. So we're okay with that.
Can you do mixed use in R3?
No, that's residential.
Okay.
But that is residential already now.
Yeah, and I think R3 next to the park, it would be nice to have some high-density residential in that location.
Yep. Okay. All right, okay. Thank you.
Were there any other areas that staff needed direction on, Bruce, do you recall, as far as the map itself?
The discussion, if we're talking about all the zoning map changes at this point, they're the 12th to 14th and Long Branch to Manhattan, those two blocks, if the council wanted to discuss that.
Were we, was everyone okay with what was suggested
yes.
by the commission?
Yes.
R3. Okay.
R3.
Okay.
Yes, definitely.
I still have some dilemmas there because I support the R3 because it's near a school there and I feel more comfortable with housing near a school as opposed to businesses. But we do still have Smith and Sons there, and I know those two blocks are largely undeveloped, and they're actually pretty blighted. But we've got Smith and Sons and the Grange who are there now, and I know we're not talking about now; we're talking about the future. And we've got, the Pismo Coast Association of Realtors is going away because they didn't have parking. But we've also got the opportunity to give back some of Long Branch. Which I guess some of it's already been given back in the past, apparently. I just still have sort of mixed feelings about that. I guess.
Well, wouldn't they be legal nonconforming?
Yeah, I guess they would be for now. Yeah,
mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. the opportunity might come to mm-hmm. actually put in a nice residential project there,
which is really what needs to be there.
Yeah,
correct.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. Okay, I can support that. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So that's consistent with the Planning Commission recommendation.
Yes.
Both
yes.
blocks
okay.
to yes. R3.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'd still like to talk more about the mixed use and live-work zoning when we get the chance to do that.
Okay. And I did want to bring up there was a question regarding the remaining three properties that had the RA designation and going to an mm-hmm. R1, and I can tell you that based on past history, the RA designation was actually intended as an interim holding zone, mm-hmm. And I know this because when La Serena and other developments around there came forward, they had to go through a general plan amendment and the zone change to change it to a designation that was more consistent with surrounding neighborhoods. So it was never intended to be a permanent zone. So I think that going from RA to R1 gives the owners much more flexibility and options as opposed to leaving it in this holding zone. And I think this kind of gives us some clear direction. And, you know, so that's my position on that, but you know, what do others think on that?
Okay, I'm fine with that. I had just been concerned about their agricultural use at this time and whether or not they could still.
It's a really good point because I can tell you when La Serena and a few of the developments in the area came forward, because they had given it this RA interim zone, and it said agriculture, then they had to get a letter from the county's ag commissioner and had to prove that it was not mm-hmm. primary soil and all these other things. So it brings into a whole lot of other dynamics.
And she had a little studio and a little house, and the little house had been converted to commercial, so she couldn't put a kitchen back in and rent it as a little house. And
now she can.
Well, can she now, though?
Yes, because it's become CBO.
Wait, let's. Could she now?
Yes, because, again,
she
in CBO you
okay.
can allow an all residential use.
Okay, so if I wanted to, now it's already rented out to a lawyer, I believe, but if I wanted to go in there and live in the back and live in the little house and put a sign on the studio as my office, could I do that? Because the studio is next to the house. It's not behind the house because it's on a corner. I think we still need more flexibility. And the reason I'm asking is, for 25 years, we've known that most of the jobs have been created by small business. And if we want to create jobs, we need to support small businesses. We need to enable people to have small businesses cost effectively, especially in this economy. And I think we need to think creatively. I gave everybody a handout about Simi Valley, who's actually permitting people to do startup businesses in their garages, and that's really creative zoning. I think we've done a fabulous job here of pulling things together and making it simpler, but I think we could still go a lot farther in making it really truly viable for people to start businesses. So I guess I'd like to argue for more flexibility. I agree on Grand Avenue. I don't want to put my living room facing Grand Avenue. But in places like up the side streets, we've got a lot of little old houses, like you mentioned over on across from the courthouse. But a lot of little old houses where people, you know, could maybe live next to the business. And same, we've got little side streets, 10th, 11th, 12th, where we could maybe have more flexibility.
So if I understand CBO and some of the other zoning correctly, when you talk about mixed use, there's nothing to prohibit someone from coming in, putting a small shop on the front that faces Grand and putting a residence behind it and living there, correct?
Correct, behind it on Grand Avenue.
Or on top of it.
Or on top of it.
Mm-hmm. And I think what Councilmember Peterson is pointing out is that we were actually going to mention this. We want to clarify that it's above or commercial uses are above or behind ground floor uses on West Grand Avenue.
On West Grand.
It's an important distinction because mm-hmm. once we get off West Grand Avenue, we're not concerned about that commercial frontage per se.
Okay, well, there is flexibility, but do I have to have a use permit? Do I have to come in and give you $1,200?
You may have
to open my office.
Well, you need to understand, though, because if you are coming in to do something like that mm-hmm. and you're next to a residential mm-hmm. area, then there's got to be some review mm-hmm. To look at impacts, because let's say you're highly successful and there's a lot of mm-hmm. cars and traffic coming in, and then you're going to have, obviously, your neighbors coming in and saying, hey, don't approve this project. So there's got to be some mm-hmm. level of review, and I don't know if he did himself mm-hmm. a disservice to throw a number out when that's not what we're talking about tonight.
Well, my concern is that if economic development is our number one priority, and I don't think there's a single person up here who's ever run it. Well, excuse me, you have who's ever run their own business or understood what it is to have a business.
I have
too. Okay, who understands the costs with starting businesses? If we really want to enable people to start businesses, I think we need to be flexible, and I think we need to make it viable, particularly in this economy. So I'm just advocating for more flexibility, for more creativity, for taking it that step further. But if we're able to do that, if what we have here enables that, then
I believe it does.
Happy. I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
I believe that it does, and I mm-hmm. think that it's still what we have in place, at least what is proposed, allows for that flexibility, but also allows for the for the neighborhood to continue to function as mm-hmm. the type of neighborhood mm-hmm. that it is.
Right. I'm not suggesting that, you know, up in the R1 that we do this. That's not what I'm proposing.
No, I know. Yeah. But even mm-hmm. still, where we are, you're still there's still homes and people having their life, you know, their mm-hmm. lives and so on. So I do believe that this is mm-hmm. addresses that issue.
Okay. And then my final other question on that is I would like to take a look at allowing people who have a home occupation permit to have an assistant. You know, if you're a realtor, you often will have someone come in who will process files for you, or you'll have someone come in who will, and in fact, I don't think you need a home occupation permit to be a realtor. I always had one, but a lot of people who have home occupation permits may be doing something where they would use an assistant. Now, in live work, you can have up to two people to help you. We've decided that's possible.
And I would be happy in the same position saying, I need a person to come in.
I just don't think that's going to be a big impact on the neighborhood or the mm-hmm. neighbors. I mean, you know, I think that would be reasonable.
So I think we have some consensus to maybe move toward one employee. Because clearly, and I know that we're changing things to be responsive to the economy the way it is, and the whole idea is when someone's got a home business and we hope that you are extremely successful, that you then will move out of that area and move into a more traditional mm-hmm. commercial area or office.
Okay.
Okay?
That's good. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Could I ask one more question?
Sure.
Telecommunications. Where are telecommunications allowed now? I wasn't. I don't think I ever understood that.
Basically, they are allowed, subject to a use permit, in all zones currently, and there is no proposed change with the zoning code update. What we did do is adopt lengthy regulations now that would give the commissioner council more opportunity to first look at publicly owned properties, also to look at providing additional analysis where appropriate. It's quite lengthy.
So would we be able, if we chose to say that they're industrial uses because they're towers, if we're talking about cell towers?
The council would specifically then want to remove the use permit requirements within certain zones. If they were not appropriate in some commercial zones, then we would actually take it from a use permit to being not permitted. So that would be something that the council would need to consider.
So on page 2-28 in the industrial zones, at the very bottom, it says telecommunication facilities are allowed in the CI zone with the use permit, in the CIC zone with a use permit, and the industrial zone with a use permit.
And on page 2-22 for the commercial zones, you would see the same listing, telecommunication facilities, use permit in all commercial zones. And I think you would see that also in residential zones.
And I will just say I have looked at hundreds of codes over the years, and this is a 1,000% improvement over what we have now. This is really easy for folks who want to invest in this community to come and take a look at the type of use and the zone and understand exactly what their the permit requirements are.
I had another question, too.
You're on a roll.
On the needless, personally, I don't have a problem with needless because needless to me, that to me is good neighbor. You know, you don't need to have a roof that extends so far out that it's not possible for your neighbor to see anything. I don't have an issue with needless. I like needless because it means being a good neighbor. You don't need to make it impossible for your neighbor so that you don't get people doing it just to be vindictive. But obviously other people have trouble with needless.
Well, I think the commission has made a very good recommendation, because I can tell you on a few home improvements that the council had reviewed in areas where it was R1, they were allowed a second floor, and the issue of substantial, I think they came up with, if you're blocking more than 50% of someone's view, even though that's a little dicey. Because when you start telling people to move, to redesign a house to protect one neighbor's view, they may block someone else's view.
Right.
And that's why the council in the past has said, hey, we're not going to get into that. We're going to preserve views along public ways and corridors. The issue of needless, how do you tell someone who bought a lot with a small home, their family starts to grow, that you can't add to that and say that's needless? I mean, that's
right.
A judgment call.
I wouldn't call that needless.
Right.
Well, I would say after three terms on the Planning Commission, that was an issue over and over and over and over again. And both those terms are hard to define.
Mm-hmm.
So I think getting rid of needless is just as well, because it's one less thing you have to fuss about. The substantial to some people are one thing as opposed to what it means to another. So at least substantial has a little more. You can at least look at it and give it some kind of a measurement, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, my concern about it is that we're about one of the very few cities that actually has a view shed ordinance anywhere. One of the few cities that's actually still able to protect our view shed ordinance. And I think that makes us... Well, I wasn't, but...
Are you arguing to keep it in there?
I'm outnumbered. Yeah, and I'm outnumbered, and that's fine. I'll go with the majority.
Okay.
I don't have any choice.
Okay, so did you have something?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
I would still like to go back and address the issue I brought up about the R1, the rear setback, where the 10 feet I don't believe is that's not enough. If you change it to a minimum of 15, I know it had been 20 in the past. You know, a rear yard is really nice to have for families, and I think you'd prefer to have your children playing in the back than in the front. Because, I mean, your front, you got 20 feet. I don't think, and I'm sure, Bruce, I had discussed this with him before, that it would not cause any problem with the size of the property, the structure.
Okay.
Help.
Well, feel free.
The point is that when you have an 7,500 square foot typical lot and you factor in the required setbacks, 20 in the front, 10 in the rear, 5 on each side, and you look at the lot coverage, there's no way possible that you can build to the 10 foot rear and fill that area. You'd be exceeding the lot coverage.
Right.
So increasing the setback would not decrease the amount of building that can be structed in that particular case. If you have a 5,000 square foot R1 lot, then that might influence the building footprint, but that doesn't prevent you from building a two-story home unless you fall into the issue we just spoke about. Fuchsia. So.
10 feet
okay.
is pretty tiny.
So you're suggesting 15.
Yes.
Minimum 15. We got to get the wording right. When you say minimum 10, we're not saying maximum 10. If the majority wants, if the council wants to go to 15 feet minimum, I'm okay with that. And I think you're going to have to deal with that when someone comes in and takes a 7,500 square foot lot, if it's an R2, and says, hey, we want to put two homes on this, and then they start to struggle.
Well, no, but I'm not talking about R2. I'm just talking about R1. R2 is going to remain at 10. I'm only discussing R1.
But in R1 zone, you can have a granny unit?
Yes, you can. So
I don't have a problem with the 10-foot setback, but, you know, I live in an R3 development, so I'm not concerned about that. I think the minimum is important, as you said, but
I think
in it.
Yards are really good too, and I think there are other ways that we address it. I'm inclined to keep things more flexible rather than less. It's not a big deal to me, but if I had to err on the side of flexibility as opposed, in case there may be people who want grandma to live in the back, and I'd rather give grandma the chance and not keep grandma out because of the 15-foot requirement.
Okay. Poor grandma.
Grandma.
Okay.
So where are we? 10, 15?
We're leaving it at 10.
All right. I tried.
Okay.
So if there are no other specific clarifications or discussion, I think we've come to the moment of truth. And there is a... Do you have something else, Mr. Buckingham?
The discussion regarding emergency shelter overlay.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
I thought that was just fine.
I thought I heard the owner or a representative say they were okay with the
Planning Commission recommendation.
Yes.
Then the commission council supporting the Planning Commission recommendation.
Yes.
Well, we'll see when someone makes a motion, right?
Oh, boy. Are we at that point?
We're either going to make a motion to do something tonight, or we can continue this to another meeting.
Well, I will make a motion.
Okay.
But I notice we have two resolutions, or we have an ordinance and a resolution.
We're going to take the environmental document first.
Which is the ordinance?
That should be the resolution.
The resolution?
I believe.
Okay. All right. I move that we accept the resolution of the City Council adopting a local coastal program amendment for development permit application number 11-12.
I'll second that.
And that is adopted a negative declaration, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, roll call.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Flexibility to draw that according to property lines.
Right. Yeah, because I certainly don't think you should take a zoning line and split a property.
Right. No, it would be the property line.
We'll just identify that in the second reading so that you can see the selected area.
Very good.
Mr. Mayor, in addition to staff having caught the changes, we'll also be sure to review the recording of the meeting to make sure that we've got them all.
Okay. Wow. I'm looking at this staff report, and there's multiple resolutions in here.
It's five.
One more to go.
Okay.
Okay. I'll
So, hang on a sec. So, that's the ordinance. Sorry about that.
If you want to go forward with the motion to introduce the ordinance, and that's the ordinance as amended, as you've discussed tonight, then you can go back to the resolution which approves the general plan amendment next.
Right. Very good. Thank you, Liz.
Where is that? Was that number three you just did?
Number three, basically under recommended action.
So basically, what is on the motion on the floor is the motion to introduce the ordinance to amend the zoning code as amended, and staff has captured with those amendments, and we have a second. So at this point, if there's no discussion on the motion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. So then we need to go back to the resolution approving the general plan amendment.
And number two. Okay, I move that we accept the resolution adopting, and this is the negative declaration then?
No, we did that one.
I did it in the wrong order.
Adopting, yeah.
No, you're fine. Yeah. You're fine.
The resolution of the City Council, I'll move that we adopt the resolution of the City Council or the City of Glover Beach adopting a general plan amendment for development permit application.
Yep.
I second. Did that one before.
Hang on a sec.
No, you did the negative deck.
No, the mayor said that was the negative deck, but actually I did the one you just read.
Oh, I clarified it as a negative deck. Sorry
yes,
about
it
that.
Did.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
So then why don't you... So, okay, Debbie, you just made a motion on
attachment two. And which is the one that... general plan amendment.
Okay.
Okay.
And I seconded that.
Okay. And my only question on this motion then is that there were some amendments to the zoning code. Will there be amendments to some changes to the general plan amendments? No?
Yes, we would need to make some minor associated changes, okay. Mostly regarding those acreages, so we would recommend that be included in the motion.
Okay.
So moved. So included.
Is a second okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. Roll call.
He's doing what?
Yes.
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 Yes. And now we have to deal with the resolution approving the local coastal program amendment.
That's attachment four?
Mm-hmm. I will move that we adopt the resolution approving the local coastal program amendment.
I second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no discussion on the motion, roll call.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I think we got through that.
Okay. Nice hard work. Finding all those.
So, I mean, it's been a long night. So why don't we do item number eight, and then, let's do item eight and see where we are. And this is basically the 2012 Home Investment Partnership Program application and retention of a firm to assist with the filing of the grant application. Mr. Buckingham.
Mayor, members of the council.
Just a quick background. As you know, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, implements community development block grant, CDBG, which authorizes funds to eliminate blight and assist low and moderate income residents. The city was part of the entitlement program administered by the county. Last year, the council withdrew, and we've now become an entitlement program, or we are now a non-entitlement statewide program to increase grant funding opportunities. In June of this year, the HCD did announce the funding availability for this home investment partnership program known as HOME. It's funding for program activities such as the first-time home buyers program, owner-occupied housing rehabilitation. It can also include funding for construction of affordable rental projects, properties to home ownership. In order to be eligible for funding, you have to be in a low-income household, which is 80% of the median income of the county. That's about a $60,000 income for a household of four people currently. If awarded, the funds would be used as this financial assistance tool, basically in the form of a deferred payment or the gap financing. The proposed home buyer can afford a conventional loan but needs this assistance in order to be able to fund the entire purchase of the home. The city anticipates these funds that are being offered at a rate of 0% for 30 years with deferred payments to coincide with a conventional 30-year loan. The maximum assistance per applicant is proposed to be capped at $50,000 to try to help the most individuals as possible, but I would mention that we might have to increase that cap depending on the median housing prices. It's a calculation that the consultant needs to go through in order to satisfy the home program. So staff is recommending the council adopt the resolution approving submittal of the home application and adopt the resolution amending the annual appropriation resolution.
Very good. Thank you, staff. Any questions?
I just have one question.
Okay.
So this is a deferred payment. So if the individual sells the home, then at that time we get the money back?
Correct.
Unless you sell to a person who meets the same qualifications.
And then the deferment goes
along
with
it. Will roll over. There's an affordability covenant that's placed on the property that contains all those specifications.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
Thank you. You say that the program is 100% grant funded. Does that include the cost to prepare the grant application as well?
No. In this case, that's the only thing that is not being funded by the grant. Because
okay.
We're first time trying to get this started, there is the fee for the consultant to assist with the grant application preparation.
Okay. Okay. So when we do the...
If you are awarded the grant, then there is an administration fee
right.
that comes to the city for administering
and that.
And that
would
yes.
pay us back for...
It wouldn't pay you back for this initial upfront.
No, but for the administrative
yes.
costs and so on. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. This is a regular business item. I'm not going to open this. Well, let me see. I think I see someone here that's from the public. Does anyone from the public want to address this item before the council? Not seeing anyone coming forward. Let me close it, bring it back. Someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I will.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Please.
Okay, thank you. I move that we accept resolution authorizing the submission of a home investment partnership program application for a first-time home buyer program.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, roll call.
Councilmember Mahan?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson?
Yes.
Councilmember Bright?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. Okay, we have no pool consent items. And does anyone have anything on their committees that they really need to report this evening?
Isn't there a second part to this here? Or did I put wrong papers in? Did I leave that in?
Well, hang on a second. You're correct.
I didn't have it.
Well,
anything
yep.
Oh, wrong one.
There's a second resolution.
There is.
Okay. I thought so. Okay. I move that we accept the resolution adopting the first amendment to the annual appropriation resolution number 12-35 by providing funding for CDBG grant writing consultant Adams Ashby Group.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Roll call.
Councilmember Mona?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson?
Yes.
Councilmember Bright?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. Okay, so now moving on. Council committee reports.
I've only got a little announcement.
You want to do that under communication?
Sure.
Okay. Let's do that. Go ahead. What's your announcement?
Council members Bright and I are signing up for the Stone Soup Festival Dune Run Run, and we'd like to challenge the rest of the council because we won in our age group last year.
We were the only two running.
And what's your age group?
Walking.
We're not telling.
You if you want a challenge.
We did the Dune Walk last year.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
Oh,
my goodness. Just great. Right.
Okay.
I accept the challenge.
I'll be there to cheer you on from the start and when you finish.
It's August 25th and 26th at
okay,
Stone
very good.
Soup Festival.
So
you
I
can't run, you can dance.
Great. I did want to bring up one thing because I didn't bring this up at the last meeting and I didn't want to let this moment go by. I know times are tough and we're dealing with a tough economy and the state that continues to. I have brought this up to the SLOCOG board executive director, and so he's looking into it. The problem is that many years ago, the state, when they started experiencing problems with funds, decided they were going to take state funds and put it on actual state highways. So even though Oak Park was considered a regional route, the state made a policy decision that they would not utilize monies on streets like Oak Park.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, I drive it all the time, and I can tell you it is becoming really, really rough right at the corner when you come off of El Camino and turn head.
Yeah.
Towards Silver Beach.
So I think the idea is just to have staff take a look and see, investigate to see if there are options, and if
yes.
there isn't, then we just need to. I just kind of feel like we, in our roles, need to find, to at least explore that.
So the direction, Mr. Mayor, is that we'll add this on a future agenda. Most likely, you'll see it in September.
Okay.
I have one thing, if I might.
Mm-hmm.
If the other council members will allow, I'd really like to see an agenda item regarding the water meters, the accuracy. What do you do as a resident and a ratepayer when you feel that your meter isn't working properly? Where do you go? How do you see that gets rectified? Because I've had several people talk to me about this issue, and they really become very frustrated and feel like they just don't really know where to go and what to do. And I don't know what to tell them because I don't really know how the whole thing works. So I think as representatives of the citizens of this town, we should know how all that works.
I agree.
Okay. So I think the direction is to staff is maybe just an update or
informational report.
So, yeah, I would say informational report. Because I know that when we changed out the meters many years ago, the old meters definitely weren't reading, and and so when the new meters were installed, it started reading accurately, and people's bills went up, and there was a lot of concern.
And there are some pretty simple ways to figure out if there's water leaking that they can do, so.
And that would be a good thing for people to know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
May I bring up something, please?
Sure.
At the last meeting, I did bring up our representation on the sanitation district, and I do recall that Councilmember Bright and Peterson both agreed that we need to look at that, and there had not been clear direction for that, so I would like to request that we do put this on a future agenda.
Well, okay. We had started having this discussion, and I think what happened last time was the city attorney chimed in that it was the mayor's appointment, and I think that's where we had stopped having that discussion. So I don't know. Do you guys want to have that discussion and give me your feedback in public? I'm okay if you want to do that.
You know how we feel, and you've pretty much said that that's your decision. So if we want to have that discussion again, I'm good with it. It's up to the rest of you folks.
I say yes.
I'm of two minds. I think we have all made our views known.
And, I agree.
You know, we have an election in a few months, and whoever's elected whoever the new mayor is, can make their own choices. So we can either try to strong-arm you in a few weeks with an agenda item, or we can wait a few months, and the new mayor has the choice.
Well, then I think let's just put this to bed tonight. I'm not going to change representation, and for a few reasons. You know, we have a group that keeps coming here and making certain claims, and they haven't given us any credentials as to what makes them experts. The second thing is that, you know, we have asked for information, and we've been getting it from our representative. And the third is that to change representation at a time now when there is discussion with the Regional Water Quality Control Board sends a terrible message. And the process they're going through is the typical process. And I'm not saying that it's a good thing that there was a spill. Certainly something, there was an accident that occurred. They have taken steps to make sure it doesn't happen in the future. And I don't want this to become an issue of
pro tem. And that's not why I'm backing down either. But I agree with you on the point that at this point, I think the mayor pro tem should see it through.
Okay.
I think he's the best person to do that because he's been there for several years and he knows he has the history. He has all the pieces of the puzzle.
Okay. Then my only request is that we are informed, because I do believe we have not been properly informed in a proper manner, and that if it is a question of something that comes to closed session on the water on the sanitation district, there is legal, I believe, precedent that says that it could come to us in closed session, especially if it's an important decision.
Well, let's ask our city attorney on that matter, that if there is an item discussed on a regional board in closed session, is someone then allowed to come back to a council and say, let's have a closed session and have a discussion about what was discussed in that the other closed session?
In general, the answer to that is no, it isn't allowed, unless there is but the real question is, how is the city involved? If the city is involved, then you may be able to use one of the closed session exceptions, one that's used for example, joint powers agencies, to discuss items. It's going to depend on what the issue is for you to know whether or not there can be a closed session discussion. In general, for a regional board, the answer is no.
If I may, Mayor.
Yes.
This same issue was brought up at the Oceano Community Service District by one of the directors and legal counsel for the sanitation district, explained that what takes place in closed session, any information that is available to be given to the council of each of the agencies will be done. And so far, there is not any information that I am at liberty to bring to this council. That has been directed by the attorney that represents the sanitation district.
Okay, but I do agree with you that we do need to have information that is readily available, and as long as it is not in violation of the law. Because I think even when we have closed sessions, we can't disclose that out in public. I don't even share things with my wife because we can certainly be liable for information that was discussed in closed session.
So if we have questions about it, we can't necessarily ask the mayor pro tem as the South Sanitary District representative if it's confidential. But there is the Public Information Act. If we have questions, we can always go to the board and ask other questions. Not the board, but we can go to the district and ask
Yes.
Ask them to release, we can make information requests.
So, yeah, those are the avenues mm-hmm. that we certainly can have a discussion, and we've done that with not just Bill, but we've done that mm-hmm. with Karen. We were dealing with the Air Pollution mm-hmm. Control District and the dust rule, mm-hmm. and I would suggest we do that with Zone 3, and then, you know, because we want to know what's going on with Zone 3, and so we would ask that. But mm-hmm. if we can't get information here, then we definitely would need to go to that body mm-hmm. and ask a question. And then you always can do a Public Records Act request. Mm-hmm. So. Okay. Is there anything else? Okay. City Manager, reports and comments.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I actually have two quick items. One is the recommendation to cancel the meeting of September 4th, 2012, for a couple of reasons. One is it's following the Labor Day holiday. Secondly, I'm aware that some council members will be attending the League Conference and will probably be traveling that day. So my recommendation is that we actually cancel the meeting of the 4th of September.
Okay. How does everyone feel about that?
Well, as I'm one of those who'll be traveling, I suppose. I didn't realize it was coming up that soon. I'm for it.
Okay. To my left?
I think that's fine.
And the second thing?
And Mr. Mayor, I just earlier in the meeting under public comments, there was some discussion about the fiscal health of the city. I just want to assure
yes,
everyone
thank you.
That the city is fiscally very healthy, and we have reserves in the bank. The issue that was alluded to was primarily related to the dissolution of the redevelopment agency. And it did cause us to, in order to be able to meet all of our obligations, we didn't dip into our own reserves. I want to make sure that that is clear. We actually authorized the use of the bond proceeds themselves